The following presentation is brought to you by the Shining Wizards Network, home to a vast array of sports and entertainment podcasts, including Two and a Half Wrestlers, Neckbreaker, Turnbuckle Throwbacks, Inconclusive Breakdown, Midnight Jury, After Midnight, Apex Radio, and The Shining Wizards. Plus exclusive shows Thursday Night Destruction and Kevin Gill's King of Indies podcast. Available on iTunes, Stitcher Radio, Audio Boom, and at ShiningWizardsNetwork.com.
What this network needs, this network gets. I promise you that.
The opinions you love. The history you crave. This is Rant EM Radio.
The recognized symbol of excellence in sports entertainment.
The Shining Wizards Network proudly presents
the Turnbuckle Throwbacks Wrestling Podcast
with your hosts,
the Impact Playa, Phil Rea, and Dave Mega Powers.
Gentlemen, boys and girls, and everyone in between, your recognized symbol of excellence in sports entertainment broadcasting, from the current to the way back. As always, we are the Turnbuckle Throwbacks Wrestling Podcast. As always, again, your gracious host, the Impact Player, Mr. Phil Ray, and I am joined by...
Power-san,
Ichiban. What's going on, kid?
Oh, genki desu. I'm doing good.
Good, good. Glad to hear it.
How are you doing?
Better, yes. Better. Had a rough couple days, but things are doing all right. Things are moving along.
I hear that. I want to apologize to you on the air for not being able to make it out to JCW on Saturday. You know what? I actually drank the night before, and I didn't think twice about it. I'm like, it's not going to be a big deal. I didn't get drunk or anything, but it fucking hit me the next day. I had such a migraine that I was like, I ain't doing nothing. And I wasn't feeling better until like around 9 o'clock.
It was funny because I had initial plans and JCW was my backup plan. Like I knew you were going before you told me you weren't. So my boy was like, the weather was really crappy anyway if you were on the Northeast. Really, really bad rain.
Yeah, and now it's going to snow on Friday.
Yeah, just in time for spring.
Yeah.
good stuff. Thanks, Mother Nature.
That's what I think about when it's spring.
Yeah, thanks, Mother Nature. So when you said you weren't going, I was like, oh, man, now both my plans are just out of whack. So I wound up just staying home, eating some bad junk food, and watching a lot of TV and just chilling out, actually. I caught up on some wrestling, watched NXT, and, chilled out. Listened to the Wrestling Call-In Show. I called into the Wrestling Call-In Show to yell at them.
So that's why it was such a good episode.
Of course it was a good episode. Every time I'm on it, it's a good episode. By the way, we are live, Dave.
We're live.
Rant EM Radio, Rant Entertainment Media is the place. We are a Shining Wizards Network production, as always. Lots of stuff going on tonight. Let's get right into it. Before I get into my news and notes, I just want to give you a quick rundown of what's going on for tomorrow and next week. Tomorrow night, the 9 o'clock show, Rant and Wrestling, will do a live special tomorrow at 9 p.m., March 19th. They normally do a recorded podcast, but they're going live tomorrow night. So
Rant and Wrestling.
Rant and Wrestling. That's the name of their show. The Rant EM Radio's WrestleMania weekend begins Thursday, March 26th, which is next week. So we're going to get you set up. Tuesday, Double A's breaking down the Rant. Wednesday, you and I will be doing WrestleMania 10 next week, right?
Yeah.
Okay. And then coming Thursday, our boy Lex will be doing the Lex podcast, The Road to Santa Clara. He'll be there. He'll be our official Rant correspondent. He'll be checking in at 7 p.m. At 9 p.m., Rant and Wrestling returns with a WrestleMania booking special. Friday, March 27th, our boy Surfer doing the Surfer Fun Show live.
That sounds fun.
Yeah, that does sound fun. Surfer does it every year, so, you know. Let's see. And then apparently, I think there's a live, what do you call it, Freaks and Effing Geeks after the Surfer show. I'm not sure. But Saturday, here's cool. Saturday, March 28th at 1 p.m., you had the Rant and Wrestling replay from the WrestleMania booking show. 5 p.m. live, a Rant EM Radio roundtable live. I'll be on there for like the first hour. If you want to join in, you're more than welcome. And then after that, at 11, between 11 and midnight, immediately after the Hall of Fame ceremony that'll take place the night before Mania, we'll be doing a live post show. I don't know if we'll be on that, but I'll try to listen in if I don't. So now Sunday, now here's the cool part. Sunday, the Lex will be on replay. The Rexplex, Thursday Night Delight, Mr. Sexy Rexy, he'll be checking in at 10 a.m. All live shows, by the way. Mr. Will.i.am Morgan doing a day shift. 12 noon, Wrestling Call-In Show will be live with him and Stevie Ray and the rest of those cats. You and I, hopefully, will be joined by Rage and Shining Wizards Eddie. 2 p.m. for the Turnbuckle Throwbacks Live special. You and I will be breaking down Mania, as we always do. And then
breaking it down and building it back up.
That's right. 4 p.m. is the Rant with Double A and Tony C. And then 11 p.m., right after the 4-hour WrestleMania, will be a 2-hour post show. Of course, the match results for Mania can be found as they happen on Facebook, Twitter, and at rantemradio.com. Lex will be reporting, like I said. He'll be also providing photos and videos. Our homegirl, Kristen, who will also be at the event, will be our Turnbuckle Throwbacks correspondent. She'll be checking in with us on Sunday as well.
Ooh.
Chat room will be open the entire 4-day marathon. So if you guys are bored, you want to jump on the chat, do so. And then the best part of it is if you missed any of the programs or partially most of the programs, or whatever part of the programming you missed, Double A is going to be playing a full marathon of all the WrestleMania programming the following day, March 30th on Monday, and Friday, April 3rd, beginning at 6 a.m. Obviously, all shows can be made available for download for iTunes. So there you go. That's your lineup. New Shining Wizards this week. They got Mick Foley on around this time last year, too, the same thing. Probably plugging that Dream Wrestling match fucking contest for that charity he does. Shout out to them. Midnight Jury's doing the Leprechaun movie. I think it's Leprechaun 2. Check them out as the festivities continue. How was your St. Patrick's Day, man? Did you do anything yesterday?
I went to work.
Yeah, me too.
I went to work, and then I went to the gym, and then I was so fucking tired. I just crashed as soon as I got home.
Yeah. Josh,
I've been crushing it at the gym. I've been going four times a week. This week I'm aiming to go 5 times.
You're a champion.
Hey man, you know when it's there, you know you got to go.
All right, Tank's in the chat room. Matt's in the chat room. What the hell is that?
Dead or alive, you are coming with me.
That's right. RoboCop.
That's RoboCop for Matt. Tank, Josh E, and everybody else has their hiding their shit. All right. So let's get into.
Oh, I was actually looking at the chat dialogue from last night.
Yeah.
And I thought it was hilarious that Pastor Seidel wrote down, "Does the Film Actors Guild ever go by their acronym? I doubt it, and I think I know why." Meanwhile, it's actually the Screen Actors Guild.
Right, it's not, yeah.
BAG was in the movie Team America, whatever the fuck that movie was called. World Police. Team America. It's been a while.
It's been a while, Dave. It's been a while.
But it is not called FAG. It's SAG.
It's SAG, yeah. Speaking of SAG, the Tribeca Film Festival is coming back to New York City again this year. And I'm hearing they're closing the festival out with an on-screen remastered production of Goodfellas.
Really?
Yeah, I might have to go to that.
I have something that might trump that, depending on what your film preference is.
You know me. Well, I mean, you know, it depends on my mood, dude.
Mm-hmm.
I saw Goodfellas in high school, so I was hyped, you know? Came out around junior year, sophomore year, I believe it was, 90, 91. So,
I actually haven't seen it.
You've never seen Goodfellas?
I think I might have to buy a ticket to that.
You gotta be crazy. Dude, you have not seen... You, a film guy, have not seen Goodfellas?
Trust me, there's a lot of stuff I haven't seen. Oh, there's a lot of movies out there, Phil.
No, Dave, that's like... Come on, dude, that's a classic, bro.
Yeah, you know, I heard a lot of great things about Goodfellas, but also for a good while, I avoided a lot of those mob movies.
Well, it was based on a true story. I mean, if you read the book by Nicholas Pileggi, Wise Guys, all they do is change the names a bit. That's pretty much it. But the story is true. And Scorsese's a fucking genius, man. You can't trump
that's
him.
That's true. That's true.
Yeah, you can't trump that. So,
but April 4th came out of nowhere. $10. At Anthology Film Archives, which is where the old school Kung Fu Fest is going to be, where I'm going to be working.
When
for
is
the
that?
New York Asian Film Festival. But
so am I finding a replacement for you again this year?
No, because it's on Thursday, Friday, Saturday, Sunday.
Nice, nice.
So I will be here on Wednesday.
Good. That's what I like to hear. So what's going on April 4th?
Showing Gremlins there with a majority of the original cast.
No shit. They're going to be in New York.
They're going to be there. Phoebe Cates will be there in the flesh.
Ooh. I just got that like 3 months ago on Blu-ray for like $7 at Walmart.
You know, I just saw it not too long ago at Lincoln Center. It was like a...
Yeah, you were telling me about that.
Yeah, it was like a... I guess like the version that they show around to like test audiences, and it had like 5 extra minutes in it with like it's still the same ending, but it just kind of, you know, ends. I don't want to give anything away, so I won't. But anyway, it just had extra stuff in it. So I was like, I got to see this. I love Gremlins 1 and 2 are amazing movies. And then sometime last week, somebody just posted up a link that I think like the star, Phoebe Cates, Corey Feldman, and some other guy are going to be at Anthology Film Archive screening that same, I presume that same version of Gremlins.
Yeah, Gremlins 2, and it came with the Goonies. It's all going to be on one Blu-ray. Oh, Sexy
Rex.
Yeah,
at Walmart.
$7.99. Sexy Rex Watson in the building. In the chat room, you can catch Rex tomorrow evening at 9 p.m. on the Rexplex. Cheap plug. Ring the bell. Holler at your boy. All right.
Matt, chat room is asking if Corey Feldman is going to be there. Yes, he is.
See?
I'll take a photo if I can.
Yeah, you know what, though?
I'm aiming for Phoebe Cates.
I got to go to that. I got to hit that Kung Fu Festival one time.
Well, it's going to be, what's it, April, I think, 14th? Through the 17th? I think that's what it is.
I think April 13th, I will not be on the air. I think it's the
13th. It's going to be 16th through the 19th.
Okay. Yeah. I'll be there for
all screenings. It's a special ninja edition.
Yeah, I know there's one Wednesday in April I will not be on the air. We'll be doing like a best of or something like that. I'm going to a baseball game that night.
All right.
So,
catch a fly ball for me.
Of course. I think all the pleasantries are out of the way, you want to get into some news, or you have anything else you want to talk about before we get into the news?
No, not really. Right. I don't really have any. Did get a nice zinger in today at work. That's really about it.
Okay. Are you happy
about
that?
That's the only thing I have to brag about that's non-wrestling related. Is somebody, like, I've been on a tear at work. I'll usually just say, like, the most randomest shit, and it just kind of gets the whole room cracking. And there was one moment where one of the coworkers is like, such and such is over by the cornhole corner. I'm like, cornhole corner? And she's like, yeah, Jordan really loves cornhole. And I was like, well, that could be true. You know, as much as Jordan loves cornhole, I don't think it's really appropriate to be talking about it at work. And then everybody just started cracking up. And I was happy about that, even though I guess they were referring to the game cornhole, which I don't know.
I just thought it was code word for balloon knot, you know?
Yes.
Right. Or the bung. As some people say, okay.
I wanted to make a glory hole joke, but it came to me much later on.
Sometimes, you know, yeah. Sometimes you get that brain fart and you can't come back with a smart answer. You know,
yeah. I think the first go around was good enough. Sometimes when you keep coming and try to layer it, it may not always work out.
Absolutely. All right. So let's get into
Let's never know when people are going to use the phrase cornhole. In any situation.
That is pretty funny. That is pretty funny. All right. So let's get into it. As announced this past Monday night, the living legend Larry Zbysko being inducted into the WWE Hall of Fame. How do we feel about that?
I'm excited. Larry is the living legend. He has been a part of some pretty honorific moments in wrestling history. You know, he had the match with Bruno Sammartino at Chase Stadium in the cage match.
Several matches with Bruno, yeah.
Several matches with Bruno.
That was his mentor.
Nobody was really, you know, being brought up in the system as like the successor to Bruno Sammartino. Granted, it didn't really pan out for Larry Zbysko in that respect, but I don't know. He's also like one of those dudes who I found interesting when I was doing Beyond that a lot of guys were emulating their style after Larry Zbysko. And I'm like, really? Because, you know, as much as I love Larry Zbysko, if somebody asked me to name like 10 matches of his, I probably could, but it probably would take me a good while to really, you know, pull up like 10 epic Larry Zbysko matches, you know? So I found it interesting that, you know, there's a lot of dudes that you'd be surprised who, you know, emulate themselves after the living legends. And, you know, just for me, you know, I didn't have ESPN or AWA back in his heyday and stuff like that. So, you know, I caught him when he was coming into, you know, doing like his last run in WCW with his matches against Steven Regal and, you know, doing commentating for Nitro. And he was just like one of those dudes who he didn't have to be the top guy, but he was always over. And the fans loved him.
Yeah. He falls into that great wrestler, bad announcer thing. I wasn't a big into his stuff, his mic work on Nitro. However, he did cut some.
He did coin the phrase the human game of chess.
Yeah, you know what? I'll give him that, but I wasn't a big fan of his commentary work. However, his promos, you mentioned the AWA, I thought were hysterical. He would have that Larry Land image behind him.
I haven't seen any of those promos.
Oh, dude.
I need to.
Yeah, he cuts the promos, and he married like Vern Gagne's daughter.
That's supposedly Vern was trying to hook up Hogan with.
Yeah, well, you know how that went. Fucking Vern. I want your t-shirt money. No, it's not going to happen. Sorry. And then Hulkamania runs wild, and Vern eventually goes out of business. But anyway, I digress.
I don't think that t-shirt money was really going to help him anyway.
Nah, not with the rate they were going. Nope. You know, we're gonna do the rise and fall of the AWA this year. That's gonna be
it's kind of overdue.
That's got to be one of our throwbacks. We'll just watch the DVD again, and we'll just critique and talk about some their high moments. They had some high moments, but with Zbysko's tenure in the AWA, he would have this amusement park image behind him, and he's like, "Welcome to Larry Land," and he would cut these awesome heel promos. He was a great heel. Larry Zbysko was sound in the ring, cut decent promos, had a really good feud with Rick Martel in the AWA. His stuff with Kurt Hennig was good. I mean, he was a solid guy, and Dave mentioned all his accolades, so I'm not going to repeat that, but, you know, congrats to him. I'm also hearing that Tatsumi Fujinami may be inducted.
Yeah. From what I've heard,
it's a wrap.
They made the announcements yesterday on SmackDown, because they do the SmackDown tapings on Tuesday. So sorry to bring out any spoilers, but it's already kind of like all over the place. So.
Yeah, so if that's the case, then sweet.
How many people are inducted so far? It's those two, Macho Man, Bushwhackers, Alundra Blaze. Wasn't there somebody else?
Arnold Schwarzenegger. And Colin Crusher, the handicapped kid. I mean, not the handicapped, the cancer kid who passed away.
The dead kid.
Yeah, the cancer kid who passed away, yeah.
He's getting the Ultimate Warrior Award.
So, okay.
Which that should be an interesting thing. I kind of fall in between. You know, I understand why they hyped that up so much as much as they did. But, at the same time, you know, it's kind of hard, you know, hearing that stuff over and over and over again. But, I'm glad that the family got to have that experience, you know, for him before he passed.
And Rikishi. Thanks, Tank.
Oh, and Rikishi. So we're going to get some, he's going to lay a little ass on the line.
Yeah, I'm glad the Warriors.
What's the name of that song? Put Some Ass On It. That's it.
Put Some Ass On It?
Yeah, when they had that Superstars, you know, singing their own songs.
Oh, yeah.
They had a song called Put a Little Ass On It.
Who sang that? That was from the WWF Originals, right?
Yeah, and what was it? Rey Mysterio had a song called Crossing Borders, if you can believe that.
All right, let's put... You mean this song?
Yes!
This world is crazy.
Oh, God.
Holding on tight, trying hard just to keep control. Don't let go. But don't worry, baby. I'll show you tonight a way to soothe your soul.
Oh, God.
Come on, baby. Let's go. Oh, I know you're aching, baby.
I know you're aching, baby.
But I'm gonna hold you tight until you stop all this shaking.
Uh-oh. Here comes the hook. I think you just found the title of our next episode. Put a little ass on it. So there you go. See, I was ready for you this time, Mega Powers.
There you go.
All right.
So you're getting quicker. I like it.
Yeah. I'm trying. I'm gonna let this rock in the background. Put a little ass on it. He says.
Good God.
All right. Let's see. Let me go back to my news here. Interesting. It was reported on PW Insider that the Briscoes, you know, WWE's been scouting all the Ring of Honor's talent.
Pretty much like all the best guys on the
team. Yeah. The Briscoes are not going to go to WWE as expected. They have a Ring of Honor contract locked in until about the midsummer. The Wrestling Observer is reporting that there's still belief that the brothers will be in NXT by midsummer. How do you feel about that?
It's 100% possible. I'm sure those guys, that's one team that everybody said was never going to go to WWE just because of
what Jay Briscoe said about the homosexuals.
Yeah.
Yeah.
In general, a lot of their promos were pretty crazy, but I think if those guys get the proper opportunity, I'm sure they will learn to slow their roll and settle their kettle.
We talked about WrestleMania 31 before. I got some tickets and attendance news. There are about 4,400 tickets left on StubHub for next Sunday's WrestleMania.
How many?
4,400.
Okay.
front row is going for $13,000.
Holy.
While the seats in the third row are going for $3,000. The prices will drop between now and Mania, obviously. WWE wants to sell. They're going to likely sell between $60,000 and $65,000 with comps given out within the WWE, the San Francisco 49ers, who play at Levi Stadium. Okay.
So they're going to be trying to pull a WrestleMania 3 and count almost every head that's in there, even if they're on the staff.
New seats are being added in the northwest corner of the stadium so they can end up close to 70,000 seats for Mania. These extra seats will be added for the 2016 Super Bowl. WWE usually ups their attendance numbers for announcements, as if they make up a number above 76,000, then that will likely be more than the real number that the NFL will announce for the Super Bowl in 2016. However, everyone knows that WrestleMania will not draw more people to Levi Stadium than the Super Bowl will, because it's the Super Bowl.
How many people can it fit for a situation like the Super Bowl?
What was that question? I'm sorry.
How many people can that place, you know, fit for?
With
for
the football? New seats, up to 70,000.
Okay.
It's a brand new stadium.
Okay.
It's just opened this year.
All right.
And speaking of tickets, SummerSlam sold out in Brooklyn under 10 minutes.
So wait, that's going to be at the
Barclays Center.
What stadium is
the
that?
The Barclays Center.
Yeah, Barclays, yeah.
We'll just have a little soiree here. They put about 3,000 of 12,000 seats on StubHub. I'm not paying fucking $700 for my family to go to SummerSlam. Sorry.
No. You get it for $9.99 on the network.
That's right. That's right.
And it's going to be just as good.
All right. I want to make a correction from last week when I went on my Tommy Dreamer tirade. I mentioned Tommy Dreamer sold 60,000 units for his House of Hardcore pay-per-view, right?
Yeah.
Not true. He sold 60,000 up to date for all eight of them.
Oh, for all of them, okay.
But that's still a lot of pay-per-view buys.
That's a spicy meatball right there.
Right. So for anybody who was listening, I wasn't corrected. I corrected myself, actually, because I heard another interview. And I just heard it this past weekend, so I'm correcting myself. I apologize. A lot of stuff I do from memory, a lot of stuff I write down just because of my work schedule and my crazy hectic lifestyle that I have going on right now. So All right, let me see if I have any more news here. I did take some notes today though, for this week actually, and I think that is all for news. Let's get into the contest and the winner of the New Japan Cup.
Yes.
Go ahead, baby. The floor is yours.
All right. I'll actually go over the card because it was actually every match was really good.
All right.
And I highly suggest everybody get New Japan World so they can watch the full event in all its glory for I think it's like $8.30 a month now.
Yep.
That's a pretty good deal. But first match in was Jushin Thunder Liger along with Kushida from the Time Splitters and one of the Young Lions, Jay White, against Tiger Mask, who will be challenging Jushin Thunder Liger soon for the NWA Junior Heavyweight Championship. And Tiger Mask 4 is teaming up with Taguchi and Mascara Dorada from CMLL. And this was an excellent six-man tag, finished off with Dorada walking the rope like the fucking Undertaker and doing a moonsault off the middle of the top rope.
Nice.
And finishes it off with a Michinoku driver on White for the win. Great way to end a match. Next match was Yuji Nagata with another Young Lion, Sho Tanaka, against Kojima and Yohei Komatsu, another Young Lion. This was an excellent, excellent match. And she actually finished off with the Young Lion, one of the Young Lions, you know, submitting. Actually, it was Komatsu with a single leg crab on Tanaka for the win. So that was interesting to see that they let the Young Lions, you know, end the match there, despite, you know, teaming up with two vets like Nagata and Kojima. Next match was one of the semifinals for the New Japan Cup. Goto went against Makabe. I think Uptown Georgie had Makabe. And Goto finished off with this incredible. It's kind of like an STF like leg lock, and he just kind of rolled him around. He rolled Makabe up into a cradle like package pin. Just got him in a situation where the guy just couldn't kick out. It was phenomenal. So Goto went on to the finals, and what's it called? The next match was another semifinal match, which was your guy Naito against Ibushi, and this was I would say probably my match of the night, and Ibushi got the win with a sit down last ride pin on Naito, who I think may have injured his shoulder during the match, because there was like a kind of like a sit down, like I don't want to call it a pile driver, but you know, it's kind of like a situation if a guy was going into a victory roll, but instead of the guy following through, Ibushi just like sat down and the guy, you know, landed on the back of his neck, which I think may have impacted his shoulder. So Naito had the shoulder injury there, got his ass pinned by Ibushi to go into the finals. Next match was Honma teaming up with Katsuyori Shibata going against Cody Hall and Tama Tonga of the Bullet Club. Honma and Shibata are an interesting tag team unit right there. There was a little friction between the two gentlemen during the match, but it ended awesomely with how did it end? My bad. Looking through I have too many notes for this match because it was pretty good. But basically, Honma hit the Kokeshi. Shibata got him into a sleeper and then followed it off with a penalty kick. And then Honma got the win with the diving Kokeshi headbutt for the three.
Nice.
And it was just a really like cool match. And crowd popped big time for Cody Hall doing a tornado clothesline. So he's getting over. He's getting over. Next match was Tanahashi teaming up with Captain New Japan to get some revenge on Yano, for Yano pinning Tanahashi, the number one seed, mind you, in the New Japan Cup tournament. And Yano's teaming up with Sakuraba. And again, Yano got the pin on Tanahashi after there was a catapult. Shibata kicked him like straight ahead, and Yano got the three count. I mean, Sakuraba got the kick on Tanahashi, and Yano got the pin. So I'm presuming that there's going to be a Yano Tanahashi match down the road, so Tanahashi can settle the score. Next match was Nakamura teaming up with Okada, Ishii, and Yoshihashi against the Bullet Club of Anderson and Gallows and Bad Luck Fale and Yujiro Takahashi. Decent match. Okada got the three count with the Rainmaker, and that led into the New Japan Cup Finals with Ibushi getting the win with the Golden Press on Goto. And Goto is actually won the New Japan Cup three times in a row. Well, not in a row, but three times over his career. But Ibushi got the win, and he chose to get a title shot against AJ Styles at Invasion Attack 2015 as his reward for winning the New Japan Cup. So, excitement galore. Check out that event. There is a listing of the matches for New Japan's Invasion Attack 2015 with the headliner, which is going to be Kota Ibushi cashing in his New Japan Cup win to go against the phenomenal one, AJ Styles, for the IWGP Heavyweight Championship.
This should be a stellar match. Now, does the winner of the cup normally get a title shot?
I think normally they were going for IWGP Heavyweight Championship matches.
Mm-hmm.
But this year they put all three belts on the line, which I think is it's definitely a smart idea, because it kind of gives all three belts equal respect. Because for anybody that's been watching New Japan for a while, they may remember that last year at Wrestle Kingdom 8, the main event was actually for the Intercontinental Championship, which was chosen by the fans. So that's a pretty big deal right there when the fans choose the Intercontinental title to be defended over the IWGP Heavyweight Championship. And as of late, the competition has been so hot and heavy in New Japan that doesn't really matter what belt you have. Like, it's all the belts are really kind of elevated at that top level, where if you're the NEVER champion, or if you're the Intercontinental champion, or if you're the IWGP Heavyweight champion, or even the Junior Heavyweight champion, you know, you're all in the same league. Which is why this tournament in particular for New Japan Cup was so good. Like, you know, I had, like, Ibushi was, he's absolutely a contender to win it, but he wasn't the guy that I, you know, thought was going to win it. And if you ask another guy, you know, one person would have said Makabe, another person would have thought Tanahashi, you know. Anybody in that tournament had a legit claim to winning it, with the exception of two guys, which in my opinion would be Yoshihashi and Yujiro from the Bullet Club, because those guys have just, I don't know, they're stuck in the mid card. We'll put it that way.
All in all, good card, though. Excited for AJ Styles and Ibushi. Again, that upper tier, the whole tournament had great talent, but the upper tier was really, really good. So,
yeah.
So who had Ibushi?
Kevin David, who got a hold of me, he won.
Now
he chose. I gave him a choice of any of the Turnbuckle Throwbacks tees, and he picked the Nintendo shirt. So he's getting a Nintendo shirt his way. And when I get some more free time, I'm gonna look around the house and pick something special to mail him out, along with the shirt.
Congratulations to him. He was our what do you call it? He was our Wrestle Kingdom correspondent, wasn't he, for a little while?
No, that was Matt Hitchcock.
Oh, that was Matt? Okay.
Yeah.
So, Kev, congratulations to you, sir. Enjoy the shirt. It's one of our favorites. We have four in total.
The Nintendo shirt's my favorite shirt, so.
Yeah. Go to prowrestlingtees.com/turnbuckle throwbacks and get a shirt.
And while you're doing that, you can follow us on Twitter with @TBuckleTBacks.
That's right.
Facebook. Or go to the website at TurnbuckleThrowbacks.com.
That's right. All viable connections to this fine programming that we have going on right now.
Stay connected by any means possible.
That's right. And if you follow us on Twitter, it'll be mostly just me. And we'll tag Dave with the whatever message you got, and I always respond, so. All right. I have one Facebook question. Good job, guys. Let's see here. I was just plugging I was actually putting the live link on the Facebook page. So, give me 1 second. No other news you have, Megapals, before we get into Facebook questions?
No, that's it at the moment.
Okay. Tank wants to know, do you guys think Hogan had a boating accident, or did he get his ass handed to him the night before? By the way, the mask Beefcake had on made him look like the Ultimate Warrior / Power Ranger, which debuted in the summer of 93, FYI. And why give Hogan another title run when they most likely knew he was going to leave to do Thunder in Paradise and go to WWE?
Well, he already did Thunder in Paradise at that point, right?
No. He was not getting out of the contract.
Okay, no. That was 93, so he didn't do it until...
No, he left in 93, went to Japan, and then signed officially in June of 94, I believe, at WCW.
Yeah, I don't think they knew that he was going to leave for WCW. I think
they just knew he was going to leave. Vince was going in the direction. It was clear at that point. And we'll talk about that during a throwback. They didn't intend on losing Hogan. I just didn't. Hogan just felt like he didn't want to take a back seat.
Yeah.
To Bret Hart or Yokozuna or Shawn Michaels or whoever the next guy was. At that point, it would have been Bret Hart. But Tank says, #remember King of the Ring 93, Black Hammer. Okay.
Yeah. Well, you know, in all fairness, you know, Hogan was still the guy.
Yeah.
There was even you know, before, you know, without jumping the gun too much, like there was a point where Giant Gonzalez you know, destroyed Undertaker for a bit. And people started chanting Hogan. It wasn't even Hogan's match, and they were chanting Hogan.
It's like what they're doing now with CM Punk.
Yeah.
So, you know what? Tank makes a really good point. But again, the only thing I just disagree with Tommy is I don't think they knew that Hogan was going to WCW. That was not in the cards.
Yeah.
I don't think Vince would even gave him another title run at that point if he knew he was leaving to go to rest.
I don't think they would even brought him back if they knew he was going to go to WCW.
Yeah. And then he went to Japan and had a sick match with the man himself, the great Muda.
Yeah.
So.
He had the match with Muda when he was still champion.
Was he still champion?
Yeah, he was.
So he did a tour of Japan while he was champion?
Yeah, because that was the infamous, well, not so infamous. If you watch on YouTube, he had the interview where he's talking about the great Muda, and he has the WWF championship with him. And he's like, this belt is a toy.
That's right. I stand corrected. Yes, you're absolutely right.
It doesn't hold the candle to the IWGP. And, you know, of course he's doing that because he's at a New Japan wrestling event.
Right. Absolutely.
And, you know, whatever happened, you know, that was a time when, you know, Hogan could go to a different country and Americans wouldn't even know. Even with, you know, PWI or whatever. No, PWI might have the results for the match, but they weren't going to cover, you know, that match as extensively as, you know, somebody who has a YouTube account now can do, you know?
Yeah.
So, I know some people that found out about that are like, oh, how could Vince let that happen? I'm sure Vince didn't care because it was in a different country and most, you know, WWF fans weren't even going to know that it happened. So... But yeah, I remember him clearly coming down the aisle with the belt, and that promo definitely solidifies it.
All right, so that's the only Facebook question we have, and that's pretty much it for news. Unless you have anything else, we'll go to break.
There is no news.
All right, so let's take a quick break and plug some stuff, and then we'll come back with a really good throwback for you tonight. One of my favorites.
One of my favorites, too.
According to our boy Stu from the UK, not one of his favorites. But shout out to Stu, by the way.
Well, I don't know what's wrong with Stu.
Stu's all right. He's a good dude. He just don't like WrestleMania 9. That's all. So let's see. To each his own, you know.
Different strokes for different folks.
All right. All right. Let's take a quick break, ladies and gentlemen. We are the Turnbuckle Throwbacks Wrestling Podcast live. RantEMRadio.com, a Shining Wizards Network production, and we will be right the fuck back.
Promotional consideration paid for by the following.
Yo, Big Phil here from the Turnbuckle Throwbacks. When you're done with our show, head back on over to ShiningWizardsNetwork.com. That's right, the mothership, ShiningWizardsNetwork.com. We have 10 amazing shows right now for your listening pleasure. We have the Neckbreaker Podcast, the Thursday Night Destruction with Dave Destruction from Pro Wrestling Syndicate, the Midnight Jury and their sister podcast, After Midnight. The Inconclusive Breakdown Podcast. The Apex Radio Podcast, part of Apex Wrestling Entertainment. Of course, you have the Turnbuckle Throwbacks with myself and Dave Megapowers. Two and a Half Wrestlers, Pat Buck, Kevin Matthews, Jay Silva, and Brian Myers. The King of the Indies Podcast with the OG of PMA himself, Mr. Kevin Gill. And, of course, the Shining Wizards. So what the hell are you waiting for? ShiningWizardsNetwork.com. It's entertainment here. Yo, Big Phil here from the Turnbuckle Throwbacks. When you're done with our show, head on over to RantEMRadio.com. That's right, RantEMRadio, covering all your pop culture and pro wrestling needs with 10 amazing shows. How about Freaks and Effing Geeks? The Rant. Turnbuckle Throwbacks with myself and the Mega Powers. The Wrestling Call-In Show. The What Are You Reading comic book show. That Awful Podcast. The Thursday Night Delight. The Rexplex. Rant and Wrestling. And the Lex Entertainment Experience. So what are you guys waiting for? Rant Entertainment Media, rantemradio.com. It's the opinions you love, the history you crave. It's Rant EM Radio. The following announcement has been paid for by the Ike World Order. Forget about that. You just brought up
Gary Hart will whip his ass.
Tony C just brought up Ike Turner. How awesome was Lawrence Fishburne in that movie?
Oh, excellent.
I'm sorry to get off topic, but he was amazing.
Play that role. Nah. I got San Antonio. Nah. I can have you.
Stop now. Ike said he only hit her once.
He beat her with a shoe!
Not even, I only hit her one time.
He said he only smacked her once.
He smacked her once, but he hit her with everything else.
I hit her with everything but a kitchen sink now, dog, but I'm saying.
Do you see that? You see that look in his eye?
Nutty is more of a man than rage.
Ooh, wait a minute now.
Oh, yes, Wax.
Wait a second. This is the co-host of the Wrestling Colin Show. You
yes, Wax.
That was so disrespectful.
All right,
nah, Steve, I can't have you.
That's
you,
why your girl's about, to, like, you that's why your star, girl's about to get eliminated from the Amazing Race.
You see that? I've never questioned your manhood, Rage.
Bullshit, you didn't, Surfer.
Tony,
you never ever questioned your manhood.
Trying to help out.
No, you did it. Yo, you always do it.
How?
The preceding announcement has been paid for.
Here we go, ladies and gentlemen. This is the world premiere of the Bret Hitman Hart Respect video. Get ready to move your body. Slim, here we go. In 3, 2, 1. Sock it to me.
Every single opponent that I've ever stepped in the ring with, they've all walked out of that ring with respect for the excellence of execution.
R-E-S-P-E-C-T.
Find out what it means to me.
I'm glad you found that, by the way.
Yeah, you know, one of the downsides of the network is, you know, moments like that, because they played that video, like, the entire time, you know, for Bret Hart going into his match with Yokozuna. Like, the whole... I don't even know where the... I don't recall when... The phrase respect was being brought up with Bret Hart. But at this time, they were building up Bret Hart after he defeated Ric Flair for the World Heavyweight Championship, that he was a fighting champion, that he was defending against all comers, which he did. And I think he went against Papa Shango for the world title at some point, and Papa Shango was no threat whatsoever. But, you know, they were pumping that video, like, over and over again. And, of course, you know, there's, like, a little reference to it from one of the commentators. But And I think the video is even shown during the pay-per-view, but, you know, that all that stuff has been edited out. So, you know, there are references like that that are made during the pay-per-view. And, you know, if you weren't watching it while it happened, you didn't know that they did videos like this.
No. So,
all right, which is great because Aretha Franklin is the best.
Of course she is. Let's get into our throwback and play a little music. Pump it up. It's 93. It's time for WrestleMania.
Just like that. What you got now? That hacksaw chin nugget. And when you get in the ring, I'll show you how to get beat up. The way to Tatanka season, to climb to the top in the World Wrestling Federation, Tatanka would be successful. Yeah, man.
Oh, man. I like when they used to cut their promos over awful rap music.
Well, they couldn't sing, so...
It's like Elvis. He's like, fuck it, let him sing this whole dialogue. Speaking of Elvis, I want to quickly wish my mom a very happy 60th birthday today. Happy birthday, Mom. I love you. And she's a big Elvis fan, so...
Oh.
So, speaking of Elvis. All right.
It's always good to pay homage to the king.
That's right. All right, April 4th, 1993, from beautiful Caesar's Palace, Las Vegas, Nevada.
It's probably my favorite WrestleMania setup.
It is my favorite WrestleMania setup, actually.
And it was the site of the world's largest toga party.
That's right. It's the ninth installment of WrestleMania. It was actually the first one held outdoors.
Yes.
I mean, obviously... Your two main storylines were Bret Hart, Yokozuna, and the other one was Hogan and the return of Hulk Hogan, teaming up with Brutus Beefcake against the then tag champions Money Inc., Ted DiBiase, and IRS, otherwise known as I Really Suck. I'm sorry. Irwin Ausheister.
It wasn't that bad.
And the IC title match with Shawn Michaels and Tatanka. We'll talk about that in a second. You know, it was Jim Ross's first, actually. His first pay-per-view was in the World Wrestling Federation.
He got his start at WrestleMania 9.
Right. Of course, Bobby Heenan and Gorilla Monsoon, Randy Savage, Mean Gene, Todd Pettengill locally here at PLJ. I like Todd Pettengill. I know he was mad corny, but I dug his stuff.
Yeah, I think he's somebody that had to grow on me. Even as a kid, I couldn't stand that guy. Nowadays, I can tolerate him. He wasn't too bad on the In Your House Blu-ray that came out not long ago.
Yeah. All right. And your ring announcer is not Howard Finkel tonight. It's Finkus Maximus.
Oh, my God.
All right. I like this pay-per-view anyway, but...
Yeah, you know, I think you know, going into it, there were, like, a lot of high hopes. And it may have not hit all the marks, but it's a pay-per-view that, you know, hey, it may not be like a perfect, you know, 10 or a 5-star. Like, there were no 5-star matches on this. But it's just really fun. It's really campy with the whole, you know, the world's largest toga party, you know, tagline that they had going.
Yeah.
And it was fun. More importantly, it was just fun.
And... I like how they brought everybody out with the, you know, with the Roman guards and the women, and Bobby Heenan comes out in a camel backwards.
Yes,
that was pretty.
The ostriches there.
With the ostriches, yeah.
That was my pretty... God, the woman that portrayed Cleopatra.
Quite the looker, huh?
Oh my God! To think that, you know, she's like 20 years older now. I don't even want to think of that.
Well, listen, it's. Listen, dude, I was a senior in high school, so don't get me started about going back in time. All right.
It's like now.
Yeah. She still might be a nice MILF, dude. You don't know. Some of these girls age well. Hey. You don't know.
Never know.
You never know. As Saul Rosenberg would say, you never, ever know. Thank you.
Yeah, jerky boys.
That's right, asshole. All right. There was a dark match. You know, I love my dark matches. You mentioned Papa Shango before. He had a dark match against everybody's favorite WrestleMania combatant, Chico Santana.
The El Matador.
Yeah, Chico picks up the win. I have nothing on this because I didn't see it. It's not broadcasted, not televised.
I'm surprised that wasn't like a part of the you know, pre-show or something.
Yeah, Chico keeping his.
But but at this time they didn't show any of those matches.
Was that his last Mania or was he on 10? I forgot.
No, that was his last.
That was his last Mania, right?
Technically, is it his last Mania because he wasn't on the show?
He participated.
It's a dark match.
That's not fair to say. If you participated, then that doesn't break the streak. I mean, that he did 9 WrestleManias in a row, man.
If Brooklyn Brawler, you know, participated in the back, does that mean that, you know?
No, in the match, dude, not in the back. I mean, there was an actual match. They just didn't. You know how it was back then with time constraints. You got to get everybody in.
Yeah.
In our last throwback, they cut a match because of that. Remember?
No, I think that was WrestleMania 8.
Yeah, they cut the Bulldog match, right?
Bulldog and Skinner got cut.
Right. Okay. Your first match of the evening, your current WWF Intercontinental Champion, the Heartbreak Kid Shawn Michaels with his new main squeeze, Luna Vachon. What do you think about Luna Vachon, Dave?
She terrified me as a kid because, you know, I never saw a woman that had, you know, kind of like a mullet mohawk, and the way that she spoke, you know, I never heard a woman talk like that, you know, not even the most grizzled of chain smoking, diner working, you know, women didn't talk like that. And, you know, the lightning bolts on the side of the head. I was like, I didn't know what to make of somebody like that as a kid. So I was terrified by her. She was like something out of a fucking Freddy Krueger horror movie.
And I just want to point out, there was another match. There was a match scheduled, by the way, but never even happened because of time constraints. And I would have loved to see this. Bam Bam Bigelow is supposed to fight Kamala.
What?
Yes. But due to time constraints, they couldn't do it.
I don't even remember that.
Yeah.
So it's like, you know, it wasn't out of the realm of possibility that for a lot of these pay-per-views that a match got cut, especially WrestleMania, because WrestleMania, they would just seem like for the first 8 or so, and apparently, well, the 9th one too, but they just tried to, like, fit as many matches as possible. I think...
That's just bad booking, Omega Powers. How do you put Bam Bam and Kamala, you cut them, but you put Papa Shango and Chico Santana?
I don't know.
Maybe, I don't know. Fucking Pat Patterson.
I think it was just shit booking. I don't know. Bad timing.
All right, but getting back to Luna Vachon. I like Luna Vachon. Obviously, famous. She was the daughter of, I think the daughter of, was it Mad Dog or Butcher? I forget.
I think it was Butcher.
But yeah. Of the famous Vachon family from Canada, from the Montreal, Quebec region.
Yeah.
Luna, a good wrestler.
The other guy was, it wasn't Maurice, it was Mad Dog.
Who
had the thick Canadian accent when he spoke.
Yes, yes.
So I'm pretty sure it was Maurice.
Yeah, Luna herself, an accomplished wrestler, sadly passed away in 2010. That was her real name, actually, Vachon.
Luna, her first name?
No, her first name, I think, was Gertrude.
Gertrude?
Yeah, you know. But she, again, she was, you know, she started wrestling for Moolah's promotion back in the day.
Wow.
Yeah, man. She was training under her Aunt Vivian Vachon and the Fabulous Moolah, you know.
Wow.
She was close to, well, the whole family was close to Andre the Giant. That's well documented. She had a long feud in Florida with Medusa.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, she's been, you know, Puerto Rico, Canada, you know, but at this time, the E wasn't really focused on women's wrestling. It was still an attraction at that point. So if you got any kind of women's wrestling back then, it was mostly like intergender type stuff. Mm-hmm. But now, so he dumps Sherry Martel for Luna, and Luna now follows Shawn Michaels' opponent to the ring, and that's Tatanka.
Mm.
This match was pretty friggin' good.
Yes.
I watched this again. Since you did not come out Saturday night, I stayed home, did some stuff around the house, and in the background, I'm cleaning the house, and I get like, I just put the network on. So I put WrestleMania 9 on. I'm listening to it while I'm cleaning, and I found myself just breaking away, not doing anything till I watched the entire match. The match goes almost 20 minutes.
Yeah.
Really, 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 really good match.
And this was hyped well because Tatanka got a pinfall victory on Shawn Michaels in a non-title match, and then on a Raw, he pinned Michaels in a six-man tag match. And, you know, as a kid, you know, Tatanka was like hot shit because he was undefeated.
Yes, he was.
And Shawn Michaels was the epitome of the chicken shit heel, as they say, because one of the reasons why I just hated Shawn Michaels as a kid, you know, not just because, well, first of all, because he put Marty Jannetty through the barbershop window, but for me too, like he was the guy that would take the count out, you know, loss, so he could keep the title. Little did I know, you know, as a kid, because I didn't have cable, didn't watch Raw or anything like that, but the dude could fucking go. And he had some great matches with Bob Backlund and Kamala during the time, and you know, managed to get some good stuff out of Crush. And this match is definitely my favorite match of the entire event.
Yeah, the match goes on 20 minutes. Hold on, we're getting something in the chat room here that there's a delay. Yes, Josh, we are live. Shining Wizards Tony's in there. Josh, refresh your screen. Yeah, so Mick Foley was on the Wizards tonight. Go to his website. They're doing the Rain thing again.
RAINN. And,
yeah, two N's. Sale ends tonight.
I think it's like a big like raffle to get
to WrestleMania. Yeah, WrestleMania.
It's like a really good deal. Like I remember last year, it was just like I think you get like a hotel and WrestleMania tickets, like really good seats. You know, you get to hang out with Mick and all this other kind of stuff, and it's a really good deal. Even I threw in some money for the WrestleMania thing, and I might take a look at it after the show.
Yeah, go to, let's see, since Tony did not put a link in the room, let's see. If,
there yeah, it is. Shining Wizards, Tony, hit us up with a link.
Yeah, go to rain.org, that's rain with two N's, / WrestleMania Raffle 2015. Here's what you can win. You win or a guest receive airfare from anywhere in the world. To obviously San Jose, you get a round trip transportation to from the airport to the hotel, 4-star hotel. You get $1,000 spending money, 20x32 art piece from Rob Schamberger featuring the wrestler of his or her choice. Let's see, 2 free tickets to Mick Foley's Hardcore Comedy Legend Show that weekend. You get 2 tickets to WrestleCon, 3 Faces of Foley photo op, $300 spending money for WrestleCon. One-of-a-kind combo print of Mick Foley and UFC fighter Leslie Smith, and autographed. You get 2 tickets to Monday Night Raw, WrestleMania access, and the Hall of Fame induction ceremony. Jesus Christ. 2 VIP tickets to Rey Mysterio's party. He's having a party, apparently. 2 VIP tickets to Shenanigans San Jose, Kevin Nash's party. 2 tickets to the Ring of Honor show that weekend, and to NXT. And a winner and a guest will receive 2 ringside seats to all 3 Evolve shows in the Bay Area. King of the Indies is going on that weekend too, kids, or to all California fans. Mm. Winner and a guest will receive 2 tickets to ringside, an evening with Jim Ross, and a meet and greet. Holy shit. And then they give you a trip to fucking Disneyland on top of that.
Jesus Christ.
Wow. So go to Rain, RAINN.org, / WrestleMania raffle. Let's see. I'll put the link up there. All right, let's see. Okay, there you go. There's the link. So, Tony says he's sorry. He's taking a shit. Yay.
Tickets are $2 each.
Yeah, guys, go buy your
fucking purchase of 5 tickets.
Yeah, go buy your fucking tickets. Don't be cheap. So, I know wrestling fans are cheap.
$10.
It's a good cause, too. Yeah, good cause. All right, let's get back to the throwback.
And RAIN stands for Rape, Abuse, and Incest National Network. Yes, it does. That wasn't mentioned.
That's why you get the two N's in there.
Yeah.
Okay, so at one point, the match, again, 18 minutes long, really, really good match.
I think it's a great example of why Shawn Michaels turned out to what he became.
Yeah, and why they didn't want to re-sign Hulk Hogan.
Yeah.
Because they had younger stock in the barrel, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
At one point, Tatanka, Michaels almost pinned Tatanka with a victory roll. Tatanka escapes, does the war dance, his fit. Michaels throws Tatanka out of the ring, tried to jump back in. Tatanka moves. Michaels was unable to come back within the 10 seconds. He pulls the referee out. So obviously now Tatanka wins by count out, but did not win the title, obviously, because it cannot change hands as a result, only as a result of a pinfall or submission.
And they pulled the false finish with Tatanka doing the fallaway slam in the ring.
Yep.
And the referee tapping him on the shoulder three times. So all the fans think, like, oh, he counted him out. And some of the highlights for me was Tatanka coming off the top rope and Shawn Michaels hitting him with the reverse crescent kick to the face.
They said it again. They said it again.
Yes. Wasn't the super kick at first. It was a reverse crescent kick.
It was a reverse crescent kick. That's right.
And I really, really liked how they were pulling out all the stops with all the false finishes. Like, there was a crossbody to Shawn Michaels. There was a two count. Tatanka catapults him into the corner. And it's like, all right, he's got him. The two count. And then he rolls him up with a fallaway slam. Two count. Top rope. Shawn Michaels comes off the top rope and Tatanka power slams him, and it's a two count. It's or Shawn Michaels who power slammed him, one or the other. It was just like all over the place. This was, I really fucking hated how it ended because of Shawn Michaels. He was too good at being the chicken shit heel back then. Yeah,
I'd rather see you go to full 20 and then have like a draw. You know what I'm saying? Like they did, they did 18 minutes and change. You could have went two more minutes and gave him the draw.
But, this is what made Shawn Michaels who he was, it was the cheap heat.
Right, and it did, I'm sorry, David, it did set up the whole Luna Vachon, Sherry thing.
Yes, which they had some matches too.
Right, I'm sorry, I cut you off, man. Go ahead,
but it was like stuff like that would, especially when I was a kid, like watching this as it happened, it just got under my fucking skin that this guy would just walk away from the match or, figure out some sort of way for him to not get pinned or not get submitted and, figure out a way to lose the match, but not lose the title.
Yeah.
So, it was stuff like that really irked me. But again, Shawn Michaels was pulling out all the stops in this match and to the point where, he was really making Tatanka seemed like, he was going to get the win. There were so many, perfect opportunities during this match where if they wanted to end it there, they could have totally done, with any of those false finishes. And I think for myself, not just being, a super fan of Tatanka, but, the guy was on a roll. He was undefeated. Like, there was really no end in sight. So for him to win the Intercontinental Championship, it just seemed academic. But, the fact that, Michaels figured out a way, to lose the match but not lose the title and, move on, again, it just made Michaels look more heelish than, you could ever imagine. And again, Tatanka didn't win the title, but it just made Tatanka even that more stronger in his position, which, I think a lot of these concepts are kind of like lost on supposed smart fans. But again, it just boosted these guys' status and brought out the Sherry Luna feud, which I completely forgot all about.
Yep. The next match, I made reference to this a bunch of times on Turnbuckle Throwbacks because I love this match. It was the debut of the Well, it wasn't the debut of them in the Fed. It was the debut of them on WrestleMania.
Yeah.
The Steiner brothers, Rick and Scott, against the Head Shrinkers, Samu and Fatu. This match, I marked out when I was younger, only because it reminded me of how much I loved the WCW and the Clash of the Champions, and it had that Clash of the Champions feel. Jim Ross is calling the action, you know?
Well, technically, it had a Starrcade 89 feel to it. Because
they fought each other in the tournament.
Future Shock.
Right, which we covered two Christmases ago. And that's yes. You can get that on turnbuckletrowbacks.com. She plugged.
So you get a taste of WCW and the WWF.
But you see what I'm saying? It had all the feels to it, you know?
Yeah. It was a hard-hitting match.
It was a good match. Strong style, slabs of beef everywhere. The Head Shrinkers.
Big skulls.
Yeah. The Steiners throwing out all their suplex repertoire on them, their arsenal, if you will. The Head Shrinkers, obviously, they're just beefy and powerful at that point.
Well, I thought this was interesting because I would say probably – I don't recall it too well, you know, the Samoan SWAT team going against the Steiners, but – I'm pretty sure the Steiners, you know, had their way with them. And this time around, the Head Shrinkers were the dominant team.
Yeah, the Head Shrinkers had the upper hand for most of the match. The match goes almost 15 minutes, Dave.
Yeah.
Match goes almost 15 minutes. At one point, Fatu picks up Rick Steiner to put him on his shoulder so that Samuel could do the, you know, that do the top rope maneuver that they do.
Yeah, the splash.
And Rick catches him. And does a power slam, which I love. Totally marked out for that.
Oh, yeah. Right? Well, no. Because what was it? Their finishing move was, you know, Samu would go in the corner, do some sort of, you know, funky karate moves or hand gestures. And then Fatu would, you know, fly off of him. But it seemed like they were trying to do the Steiner's move to them.
Right.
So, which was the bulldog. You know, off the top, but, you know, I
well,
guess
that was
like,
one of the Steiner moves.
No. Actually, more like a doomsday device.
Doomsday device, yeah.
So, my bad.
No, it's all right. I know what you meant.
But yeah, you know, Rick Steiner's on top of Samu's shoulders and Fatu, you know, about to lay some ass on him, you know, jumps off the top rope. And fucking Rick Steiner power slams him off of Samu's shoulders.
Yep.
He gets a little of that ass down on that mat.
Yep. So at that point, the Steiners get the advantage. Scotty does the Frankensteiner and well to pin Samu and win the match.
Yeah.
I never had a problem with the Steiners, man. I was a big Steiner Brothers fan. I liked them a lot. I did. They were sound. Before Scott got really big, they were just good. They had some classic matches.
I think they're really – I think especially nowadays, because nobody really talks about them, I think they're extremely underrated.
I was just about to ask you that. Like, do you think they're underrated because they're not mentioned, or do you think they're underrated because they never got their due? But that's not really true because they – before the Dudleys and after the Road Warriors, they were the team. They won belts everywhere as well. They were in Japan and –
And they're one of the few, you know, gaijins that were going to Japan and winning belts.
Yeah.
On a consistent basis. Like, they were multiple-time IWGP Heavyweight Tag Team Champions.
Right. So before before all the marks, like, oh, the Dudleys, there was the Steiner Brothers, man. They were the shit.
Yeah, you know, I think as much as people love, like, the Road Warriors, like, there's always going to be people talking about the Road Warriors and their matches. But, yeah, I don't feel that there's enough guys talking about the Steiner Brothers. I don't know if it was because they were WCW guys and their WWF run was cut short. And, you know, when the whole Nitro, you know, Monday Night Wars thing was going down, like, they were part of it. But, you know, nobody really talks about, you know, the ongoings of the tag team scene in WCW, which we covered with the Harlem Heat episode, because it was like a solid, you know, four or five teams that were, you know, fighting each other, and there were great matches. But I think at the same time, it was just overshadowed with the fact that, you know, Hogan was in WCW. It was overshadowed by the fact of, in general, just the Monday Night Wars happening. What else? You know, this was also the dawn of Lucha Libre in America, and that's, you know, getting its you know, rub at that point in time. Eddie Guerrero,
right,
Pete
right.
Blanco, Chris Jericho coming in, and
yeah, Benoit was there.
And you know, I think as far as the Steiners are concerned, you know, they're just kind of, you know, they were caught in the mix with that stuff going down, and you know, but I feel you know, if anything down the road, like guys like them should be in the Hall of Fame as the Steiner brothers.
Yeah, Mikey's got a Rick Steiner figure with the, he comes with the headgear and the varsity jacket.
Mm, nice.
That's pretty cool. I should pick, I'll post a picture of that maybe tomorrow.
Yeah, but I don't, you know, people, you know, love and appreciate the Steiner brothers, but
thanks, Uncle. Thank you, thank you, Uncle Tank, for that. By the way, go ahead.
I think they deserve more respect than they get.
Yeah, I'm gonna have to agree. I just, they, you know, because there was so many really good tag teams back then, and you know, I'm a tag team mark to begin with, so
yeah.
All right, your next match. Crush, Kona Crush, the Hawaiian Good Crush, post-demolition, still with the face paint and the, now with the funky gear, against Doink the Clown. Now, Doink the Clown's a full-fledged heel. Matt Bourne, and I mentioned this on the Wrestling Call-In Show on Saturday, because they were pissing him on about, somebody in the chat room was pissing him on about something else, and I said, you know, I said, you want to talk about guys with shitty gimmicks that can work? Matt Bourne was an amazing worker. Whether it was Mid-South, NWA, with, but him and stuff with Buzz Sawyer was great. Mm-hmm. But him as Doink the Clown, like, come on, man. That, it's shit gimmick, but it got over, and he was great. He was an awesome performer.
They let him wrestle as Doink the Clown.
Right.
Like, I mean, like, put moves on. They, like, he wasn't having the same match with guys each week. He was he was one of the regular Raw wrestlers, because if you watch Monday Night Raw, it was much different than, you know, they had a different set of guys that were wrestling on Raw than that would wrestle on Superstars or wrestle on Challenge.
Yeah, and, of course.
You know, the Raw, the regular Raw wrestlers were usually Rick Martel, Doink, Lex Luger, Mr. Perfect.
Yeah, Razor Ramon.
But 1-2-3 Kid.
It's funny, too, because around this time, my buddy had a Sega Genesis and the Sega CD system.
Yes.
And they had a Monday Night Raw game, I believe it was. And I always used Doink the Clown. Always.
Yes.
And they're like, why? Why would, my friend's like, what do you always use him for? I'm like, because it's fucking Matt Bourne, dude. Matt Bourne was the shit. Anyway.
And Doink had the special move where he, like, kicked the dude out of the ring.
Yeah, he was
just superhuman, like, finishers.
Yeah, even in the bit, in the video game, he was badass.
Yeah.
I hated the gimmick, but I loved Matt Bourne. So, you know, I don't have anything bad to say about Crush. Was never a Crush guy.
Oh, I was a huge Crush guy at the time.
Well, you were a kid, so
I had a crush on Crush.
I'm sure you did. You know, this match went almost 9 minutes, 10 minutes.
Yeah.
You know, Doink is now just ducking Crush, gains the advantage. There's a couple of attacks he missed from the top rope. Crush is now just dominating him with the power moves. Doink goes, now here's the best part. He crawls under the ring. Crush is forced to get Doink back in the ring and perform his patented, was that cranium?
The cranium crunch.
Right, he had the head vice. It's like a submission hold. Doink pulls himself up to the ropes to break the hold. Doink hits the referee, knocking him out cold. As a result of the quote-unquote ref bump, second Doink the Clown was able to interfere. Do you know who the second one was?
Was it Lombardi?
No. You mentioned him before.
Coco Beware.
No, you mentioned him before. He was in a previous WrestleMania match that was cut due to time constraints.
Skinner.
Yeah, Steve Kern was the second Doink the Clown.
You know, I think I read about him being one of the Doinks, because, like, they had, like, legit, like, if you watch a lot of those Raws from 93 leading up into WrestleMania, like, they had the multiple Doinks in the arena and, you know, trying to psych, you know, whoever his opponent out was, you know. Yeah. It was crazy. You know, they were really upping the ante with the Doink character because he was already evil. Everybody knew he was evil.
Yeah, the music was evil. Yeah, all those little tricks. Like, to win the match, they hit Crush with the prosthetic arm.
Which was, like, that's when he was really, like, taking it, like, far. Because I remember, you know, he would do, like, the, you know, the water shooting out of the flower thing. And he would set up a banana peel. And I believe Bob Backlund, you know, slipped on it and tripped. And there was one where, like, I still remember it. Like, it was pretty fucked up if you think about it. And he set up the trick wire between the guardrails, and Big Boss Man came down the aisle, and Big Boss Man, you know, for this match in particular, right, and I think in general sometimes, he would just charge to the ring, and he ran and tripped over the trick wire and just, like, fell flat on his face, and I was like, oh, wow. A guy that size running to the ring and then tripping over, like, fucking wire. And it was just small shit like that, but like the lead prosthetic arm, whatever it was made out of, it's like, oh shit, like this guy's trying to injure this man to end his career.
And that's pretty much it on that match. The next match, it's not even more. I guess you want we have.
To oh, I it. Wanted to add something about the Doink.
Oh, prosthetic. Go ahead.
Because my very first pro wrestling show was during the summer after WrestleMania 9, and I think it may have been like tagged as the WrestleMania Revenge Tour or something like that. And main event was a rematch between Hogan as champion with Brutus Beefcake as the Mega Maniacs going against Money Inc. I'll get into that match at the Meadowlands when we get to that match. But one of the matches that was on the card was a rematch between Crush and Doink. So I'm like, all right, Crush has got him. He should be ready for a double Doink. Should be ready for anything. And you know what? They did almost an exact same match from WrestleMania 9.
Where was it? At the Meadowlands?
I was at the Meadowlands, and I was so pissed. I was like, how could Crush fall for the same shit again? And he did. And then that's why Crush had to try to kill Randy Savage later on.
We'll get into that. WrestleMania. We'll get into that next week, sir.
Yes.
Your next match was Razor Ramon versus Bob Backlund. If you want to even call it a match.
It was a decent match. I liked it. This was probably my first time liking it more than the previous years. And I think one of the reasons why they brought Bob Backlund back was, I believe at the time, George Foreman, you know, won the World Heavyweight Championship. I forgot from who, but that was kind of like the like amazing, one of the amazing stories at the time. That Foreman was able to come back in his 40s to win the World Heavyweight Championship in boxing. And I think that may have been part of the reason why Bob Backlund was brought back into the WWF at the age of 43, because there wasn't really too much rhyme or reason. There wasn't really a big storyline or vignette.
They threw him a bone. They threw him a bone, let's be honest.
Yeah, yeah. He was, you know, he was a good hand from back in the day. You know, a lot of wrestlers, they're in their prime in their 40s. This is when they're having, like, their, you know, big moments. And, you know, granted, Bob Backlund won the championship a year later. So they were throwing him a bone. He was getting intercontinental title shots against Shawn Michaels, you know, coming up shorthanded. Wasn't really winning any big matches. But Razor Ramon was a new guy on the block. And yep. He got a shot against Bob Backlund.
Yeah, so Razor uses his power, I mean, most of the match. Backlund does throw a series of hip tosses, which, again, 43 years old, you would think. I wasn't a big fan of him coming back.
No.
Looking back on it now, watching it as a grown-up, I'm like, you know, it was pretty cool. Because Bob Backlund was a big deal here back in the day. in the Northeast anyway.
Even hit Razor Ramon with that atomic drop of his. That used to be a finishing.
That was one of his finishing moves, absolutely.
And I don't know. One of the things that like bothered me with Bob Backlund's return was he always would wear like the most obscure like university sweatshirts, like Bacon Academy.
Well, that's what like he's like the like what Bill Cosby did.
Yeah, well, it was more like the Tim Allen thing because Tim Allen always wore.
Tim Allen did it too. Yeah, but yeah, Bill Cosby always wore different. Always wore different college sweatshirts as well.
And he would also rape women, too.
That's right. Yeah, roofies, too. Yeah.
So I don't think Bob Backlund did any of that.
No, Bob Backlund did not do any of that. That's documented anyway. So
and Tim Allen didn't do any of that either.
He just did a lot of booger sugar, that's all.
Yeah.
He liked his cocaina. All right, anyway. You know what bothered me the most about this match? The finish.
He just got a small package.
That was. I was like, are you kidding? Are you
the
kidding me?
Edge.
Yeah, I waiting for it. Waiting for it, you know?
Nah.
No.
Especially because, you know, the intent of this match is to put over Razor Ramon, and he's a new guy. So you would think that the old guy would give Razor Ramon the rub. But I don't know. Maybe it was because Vince already had in mind what they were going to do with Bob Backlund and have him snap. Which didn't happen until, I think, early into the next year. No. I think it happened in 93 when he snapped.
Yeah, did that wrong with Bret Hart.
Yeah, and that was due, you know, that was due to losing the World Heavyweight title match to Bret Hart.
So, all right.
And but, yeah, this was kind of a very insignificant match when it probably should have been more. We should have had a razor's edge out of it.
I totally agree, sir. Totally, totally agree. Your next match was... I just lost my fucking notes here. Hold on 1 second. Ah, yes. The World Wrestling Federation Tag Team Championship.
Challenge. Double main event.
Double main event. The Mega Maniacs, consisting of Hulk Hogan and Brutus Beefcake. On this show, he was called Brutus Black Cakes. You go back to the archives on TurbicalThrowbacks.com, and you'll find that lovely episode. Against the World Wrestling Federation Tag Team Champions, Money Incorporated, Ted DiBiase and IRS.
The men who beat Legion of Doom for the championship on a house show.
Beefcake wore a protective mask. They call the titanium, the one that Tommy spoke about earlier on.
The steel rods in his head were made of titanium.
Right, but...
He had the mask on to protect his face.
Right, but they said that he wore a titanium face mask because of his injured face.
Okay.
But I know he had titanium rods in his head. I'm just telling you what they mentioned.
Yeah.
Hogan came to the ring with a black eye, which led announcers to speculate about the cause. That caused Money Inc. did it, but that's not true. Well, Hogan,
know what Heenan said about it, right?
I forget what he said.
The shower door slammed in his
That's
face.
Right. Yes. Fucking love Bobby.
But I know that they're you know, going back to Tank's question about, you know, what was the real deal, and you know, part of it, you know, people were saying the Money Inc. thing, and I forgot what Hogan. There was like one thing that Hogan said, but there was also like a rumor that he had a spat with Macho Man, and Macho Man clocked him. I don't know how true that is.
I don't know how true it is. There was a documented boating accident with him and so I wouldn't, you know, again. And you know what, dude? Honestly, if that happened, I don't think Savage would have been on a microphone. Because back then they didn't, you know, they pull people for stuff like that. They didn't, you know, it wasn't a thing where, you know, they didn't punish guys a lot, but like, if there was, like, legit heat, I don't think these guys would be in any position to perform at that point, you know?
You know,
maybe. I'm not sure. I'm just speculating. I'm not.
I don't know. Macho Man, you know, despite his demeanor, he always seemed to be very professional in, you know, how he handled himself. And I'm sure if there was any altercation between him and Hogan, if it did come to fisticuffs, it probably must have been something very serious. But, you know, a lot of people Even Warrior, before he passed, you know, speculated that Hogan was the big reason between the split between him and Liz. So, could have been stuff coming up from that. You never
that
know.
That was when Warrior was bitter, too. So, you have to, you know how these guys are, they're bipolar, you know?
He may have been bitter, but he was right about pretty much everything that he said. Warrior called out Hogan for the whole wife swapping thing, and then the sex tape came out.
That's
and it
true.
Turned out it was Bubba the Love Sponge wife,
right?
That Bubba gave Hogan the okay to bang his wife because he's such a big Hulkamaniac. Here, bang my wife.
That's right, brother. Tap my wife, brother. All right. So he comes to the match. He comes to the ring with this awful mask on his face.
Which he wore at the Meadowlands as well.
Yep. And of course, champions got the upper hand. Money Inc. was at this point. It was again another bad finish. You know.
Well, that's the thing. You know, Hogan. Whenever Hogan was at a Mania, he always got a clean finish and always, you know, went home with the belt, with the exception of WrestleMania 6.
Yeah, but I wasn't expecting a title change. I was just a bad finish. Like, why would you have a count out at WrestleMania? Like, more than one?
Yeah, I thought it was DQ.
Here's what happens. Like, you know, Earl Hebner announced that they would be stripped if they didn't come back to the ring.
Oh, right? Yeah. Because they were trying to do the chicken shit heel thing.
Right. So DiBiase comes back in and, of course, puts on the Million Dollar Dream, the chokehold. Beefcake attacks DiBiase by applying his own sleeper hold, turning his attention to IRS. But DiBiase hits him in the back with Shyster's briefcase.
Yeah.
It is tax time at this point. Money Inc.
I paid my taxes.
Oh, good. Me too. Money Inc. attacked Beefcake and removed the titanium face mask.
Yeah.
Beefcake fights back with his sleeper. The ref, of course, another ref bump, knocked out unconscious. Hogan recovers, gets the asthma attack, attacks both members of Money Inc. with the titanium face mask.
Yes.
I might add. Of course, goes for a pinfall. Ref's not there. Jimmy Hart turned his jacket inside out to reveal a striped referee jacket. Jimmy Hart was the former manager of the Money Inc. Now he's manager of the Mega Maniacs. He makes a three count and declares them the winner. However, referee Danny Davis, the infamous Danny Davis.
Who was a part of the Hart Foundation, too.
He was.
Helped the Hart Foundation win their first tag team championship and, you know, screwed over Chico Santana so Macho Man could get his first Intercontinental title.
Referee Danny Davis comes to the ring and DQs Hogan for using the face mask as a weapon.
Wow.
Money Inc. won the match, retains their titles, but of course the Maniacs threw them out of the ring and open IRS's briefcase. And what did they pull out? Money.
And a brick.
And a brick. So they celebrate in the ring. They threw money out into the crowd. Fun times.
You know, I was really souped up for this match because for me it was, you know, felt natural that Hogan and Beefcake were going to win the tag team championship. It was really...
It was hyped well.
It was really hyped well because it all started because Brutus Beefcake made his return to the WWF. From his hiatus, which, you know, which was due in part to the parasailing accident, or was it the motorcycle accident?
I think it was
because he had two major accidents, and one caused him winning the Intercontinental Championship from Honky Tonk Man, which I think that was the motorcycle accident. Then he had the parasailing accident, which fucked up his face. He made his return on Raw, and he was another one of the Raw regulars. And he had the match with Million Dollar Man. And I forgot how that match ended. Either, like, I don't know, like DQ or something like that. And there was the double team with IRS coming into the ring. And they decided to use the briefcase on Brutus Beefcake's – I knew I was going to fuck that up. Beefcake's face.
You can make it plural. I don't give a shit.
Yes, on Beefcake's face, whatever. So, so Black Cakes, and now it's Beefcake, and so he hit
Brutus Beefcake.
Yeah, they hit him in the face with the briefcase to Beefcake his Beefcake face or whatever, and they played it off like, oh, he's going to be deformed now because he had all this reconstructive surgery. He had the titanium steel rods in his face. He's dead. And when you see stuff like that as a kid, it's like, how the fuck is this guy going to come back to wrestling, period? It seemed like his career was over. Because of this, Hogan comes back to the WWF from filming some shitty movies like Mr. Nanny. With George Jefferson and David Johansen from the New York Dolls.
Staten Island native.
Buster Poindexter, hot.
That's right.
So Hogan's back, which brought him to Raw to do the big welcome back promo. And looking back on it, it seemed like the fans did not give a shit. But
it just was like we spoke about earlier. It was a sign of the times. Times were changing.
Yeah, but then again, that was kind of the Raw crowd, which was like its own. If you watch those the Manhattan Center Raws from '93,
I was there.
It was the same people every week.
That's right. I was there. I was there for the
first
one.
You'd see the black guy in the Bob Backlund shirt,
yep.
Who actually I saw at a house show years ago.
Yep.
Wearing the same sweatshirt, Bob Backlund, World Heavyweight Champion.
All right.
I sat
in his row a few times.
Guy was there. What's that?
I sat in his row a few times.
So yeah. You got to witness that man.
Oh, yeah. He was a big deal. He used to have a binder with 8x10s. And he would of wrestlers, and he would get them signed by the wrestlers back in the day.
Wow,
yeah.
He was, Green Lantern fan was there back when he was wearing a Tick shirt, the superhero, the Tick.
Big fan of the Tick. That was a good show.
Yeah, actually, he proposed to his wife on a Monday Night Raw there.
Yep.
Which is where his infamy began. But anyway. I don't know. The Raw crowd was a certain crowd, but it was still a big deal that Hogan was back. Beefcake, you know, his face was destroyed. And actually during this match, you know, too, once they took off the mask, they were punching him directly in the face.
Yeah.
Closed fists.
Yeah.
So they were, you know, Macho Man, Jim Ross, they were, you know, building it up, you know, with the direct blows to the face of this man have reconstructive surgery. Oh, like another I'm surprised this wasn't brought up during the pay-per-view. I think this was maybe mentioned more on Superstars and Challenge because I didn't have cable, so I only watched them because they were on network TV. They were on Fox
on the weekends, of course.
But they always refer to Beefcake as the weak link, and I think it may have been Heenan who always brought that up, the weak link. And, you know, as a kid, that infuriated me because it's like, oh, how can he be the weak link? He's Brutus Beefcake, you know? He beat Mr. Perfect, you know, kayfabe, gave him his first loss at WrestleMania 6. But how could he be the weak link? And that was the thing. Like, because of his injury, he was the weak link. And, you know, going into it, you know, just being the Hogan mark that I was and, you know, at that time to the intensity that I was, you know, that played on my emotions as a kid, you know, thinking like, shit, you know, Beefcake could be the fall guy, you know, maybe Million Dollar Man gets the Million Dollar Dream on him. Maybe IRS hits him with the write off and he's the guy that gets pinned and Hogan can't make it in time to save his buddy. So, you know, stuff like that played on my mind of, you know, how, you know, what the possibilities were for this match. But, you know, of course, in true Hogan fashion, they get the one up on him. Granted, they didn't win the tag titles. And, you know, I got to see the rematch at the Meadowlands over the summer, which was really cool because it was Hogan is champ, as I mentioned, because he won, you know, everybody knows he fucking wins the belt at the end of the night. But it was the Mega Maniacs going against Money Inc. for the tag titles with Sergeant Slaughter as the guest referee, who at that time had won his country back and was a good guy.
I wish this some of this card would have been on cable, like, you know how they used to have the MSG cards on any MSG.
Yeah. I know that they taped this stuff.
Yeah, it's probably on one of those VHS tapes that the Midnight Jury has in their basement.
Those either that or like Coliseum videos or something.
Yeah, that's because I like those. I like the rematches from the big cards.
Yeah,
you know, I remember going to see SummerSlam in '88, and then September, you had the rematch. You had a couple of them. You had Macho Man versus Ted DiBiase. It was a really good card, you know.
Warrior was going against Honky Tonk Man in matches that were longer than 30 seconds.
Yeah.
And they were pretty good, too, those rematches.
They were okay.
Sometimes they were better than the matches on the actual show.
That I have to agree with.
So, actually, there's a few other matches that I remember from that I'll get into as the show progresses. But I want to throw this out there because it was the very first match, and none of these guys are on the show. But part of that WrestleMania Revenge Tour, the very first match that I ever saw for a wrestling show ever was the Rocket Owen Hart against Terrific Terry Taylor.
Oh, he was and yeah, that's right. He wasn't the Red Rooster anymore.
He was Terrific Terry Taylor at this
that's
point,
right.
And it was the opening match of this card. And you know, my dad got me and a friend of mine like Bob Uecker seats,
nice,
which weren't bad, you know, because Mel Lance isn't like a huge thing,
not at all.
But I remember there's like some other, you know, there's like another family that was close by, and there was like this one black kid that was with them and yelled out, "Kill him, Red Rooster!" And that was like the light bulb that turned on for me that, like, oh, Terry Taylor was the Red Rooster.
Ding, 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 ring the bell.
Which I don't know why it took me at that point in time to realize that connection, but
right.
I guess it must have been the lack of a red mohawk, but that was the very first wrestling match live that I ever saw.
All right. Very nice words of wisdom from the Mega Powers. I like these cards that we went to that share some insight. You only get that on the Turnbuckle Throwback. So.
Well, you know, it's all about the house shows, and
house shows were the shit, man. I mean, these kids, you know, no, these kids now they don't know what the good house shows were. They just get like the guys who are. They'll get the Usos, you know. A lot of the top guys not on. They don't do the house shows anymore.
I've been checking out some of the recent MSG results recently, and they had Sami Zayn go against Pac, aka Aaron Neville.
Yeah, but I'm just saying, like, you're not gonna see John Cena on every single card. You're not gonna see Randy Orton on every. You're not gonna see Daniel Bryan. You're not gonna see. Those guys only do certain house shows. They don't do – back in the day, they did – all those guys did house shows.
Yeah, all of them.
Every month.
Yeah.
For 4 years straight, I went to the Garden almost every month.
They didn't skimp out on talent for the shows.
All right, let's keep this ball rolling because I'm getting tired here.
All right.
The total – the narcissist Lex Luger – going up against the Mr. Perfect. They played a couple of vignettes of Luger and, you know, Bobby Heenan talking him up, and, you know,
and Perfect too. There was they were doing a lot of vignettes with Perfect at this time as well.
Yep.
They were bringing back the old Perfect. I think around this time it was when they did the forgot who the sports star was with him, but the whole, like, throwing the football from one end of the field to the other. So
that was the Minnesota Vikings.
Yeah.
And then he played baseball at Wade Boggs from the Red Sox, who he was friends with in real life. Yeah. So
he inducted him into the Hall of Fame.
That's right. So Luger was accompanied to the ring by four hotties.
Oh my, yeah. Even,
Even Perfect looked back. He was like, yo, look at that piece of ass.
Yeah, despite their hair at the time, but...
Well, it was 1993.
Damn, the bodies were perfect.
The best was, it literally, Mr. Perfect looked back and like I'm sure his wife saw it on pay-per-view and called him to the hotel room going, I saw you looking at her ass.
Well, what was it? When Perfect was coming down the aisle, one of the girls put their hand on his chest.
Yeah, yeah.
And he purposely took it off.
But he made sure he looked back and check out her fucking shit wagon, though.
Goddamn right. Right. But, I kind of, like, this was, like, another underwhelming match. And, you know, no offense to either guy because they're both fucking awesome talents. But it definitely had that vibe that, you know, Mr. Perfect, you know, was the dude to, like, he was the old-timer putting over the new guy.
And Lex was even new at that point. They're probably the same age.
Yeah, they were probably the same age. But, you know, Lex Luger's the new guy in town. They're... he's coming fresh from the WBF, the World Bodybuilding Federation, that Vince was promoting before. This was before the XFL.
Sponsored by IcoPro. This episode of Turnbuckle Throwbacks is sponsored by IcoPro. You gotta want it.
Want it.
That's right. And by ThumbstickNinjas.com. Anyway, yes. Go ahead.
And Headlock on Hunger.
Headlock on Hunger and Rain with two N's.
Yes.
Go ahead. Finish your point.
So... I don't know. Mr. Perfect was, oh my God, the guy was so over at this point. Didn't matter if he was just putting people over. Like he was the dude that was on Raw pinning everybody, pinned, you know, Rick the Model Martel, pinned whatever jobber they were throwing at him. He was over. I don't understand why, as perfect timing as it was for these guys to feud, I didn't feel it was necessary for Perfect to lose this match. And granted, you know, I don't know. At the end of the day, it wasn't going to hurt Mr. Perfect's status in the company. But he was so over as a face. And, you know, Luger was very over as a heel as well. And I think this was probably, you know, granted, you know, for a lot of fans, they don't recognize the narcissist gimmick as, like, his best. But man, some of the narcissist promos that he did was so friggin' good.
Yeah, and he had Bobby Heenan as a mouthpiece too on some of the vignettes too, so it didn't hurt at all.
No, not at all. But so I think this was bad timing to put these guys together.
Yeah, it was like a mismatch almost, even though both guys, like you said, can work.
Yeah.
Luger's foot was on the ropes. The ref halted the three count. Obviously, continued the match. It was crazy because he went for a dropkick from the top rope.
Which was his old finishing move.
That was his old finishing move.
Yeah.
So Luger gains momentum and pins Perfect. Perfect's feet were on the rope. The ref didn't see it. Luger goes attack and continues to attack Mr. Perfect after the match, hitting him with the plate in his forearm, which was a legit plate that he got from a motorcycle accident.
Which there's a lot of wrestlers on this card that had steel plates inside of them.
Yeah, a lot of guys are working with some hardware inside of them.
Yeah.
I mean, the best part of this match was the end. He chases Luger to the back, and then Shawn Michaels attacks Mr. Perfect.
Which led to their feud at SummerSlam that year.
Right. So your next match, probably the worst match of the night.
Oh, my God.
Worse than fucking Crush. but Doink the Clown was all right, though.
Worse than the Bob Backlund match.
No, it wasn't worse than the Bob. This was worse than the Bob Backlund match.
Yeah, this was the worst match of the night.
Yeah, Undertaker continuing the streak of undefeatedness against Giant Gonzalez. Now, the disclaimer is, here's the deal. Giant Gonzalez could not wrestle. We know his story. We spoke about it. You know, Ted Turner got him as a basketball player from Argentina. Hurt his knee.
Hawks.
Yeah. He was going to play for the Atlanta Hawks, but he hurt his knee.
Play with Hakeem Olajuwon.
No, Hakeem played for Houston Rockets.
My bad.
That's okay.
Who was on the Hawks at that time?
Dominique Wilkins, Mookie Blaylock. I think Spud Webb was still there at that point.
I know there's some interesting named people.
Yeah. But no, I mean, Hakeem was still on the Rockets, so he would have played against Hakeem. Hakeem would have killed him under the paint, though, even though again, because it was Hakeem Dream Olajuwon was amazing, but that's another story, another podcast.
That was the golden age of basketball.
It was. Until the Bulls won, the Bulls dominated too at that point. 93, that was Bulls and Suns, I think. That was a great finals. But when they traded, when Charles Barkley got traded to the Suns, that was it was a golden age of basketball. But anyway, Johnny Gonzalez could not wrestle. I think when he left WCW and got to the World Wrestling Federation, I firmly believe that Patterson and the rest of his cronies just wanted to make him more menacing than he looked. He looked like a reject from a Star Trek episode, the original series, right? Like a spacesuit he wore.
That's a good call. That's a really good call.
Right? And then he
really cheesy-ass villains on there.
Then he comes to the World Wrestling Federation. They give him Harvey Whippleman, which is great as a mouthpiece because Downtown Bruno was the man. Harvey could talk.
Mm-hmm.
But you put him in a furry monster suit.
Not only that, but...
And his name...
WrestleMania 9, they took the fur away from the suit, so it was just kind of like this naked... You know, airbrushed suit.
They take the fur off of him and they airbrush the suit.
So it's like this really tall guy walking in a skin tight, you know, tights, shirt, and pants of him being naked.
Yeah.
Over to the ring.
But there's nothing.
As a kid, that was horrifying.
There's nothing menacing about. See, and ironically, he was one of the nicest guys in the world. One of the nicest guys in the world, from what I read. So now he's playing this character. Doesn't come off as menacing at all because he's seven. He doesn't.
No, I wanted to add too. You know, I think this is also part of Vince and crew trying to fill that gap of Andre the Giant being gone.
Of course. I mean, listen, all the big men were attractions. I know the reason why he's there, but come on, dude, you got to make him more menacing. They let him grow a beard out. If they take the fur off his suit, he puts the fur on his face. Not menacing at all. Boatman just like two slabs of beef, sloppy slabs of beef, I might add.
Yeah, Undertaker was not doing any, you know, planches off.
No. Gonzalez actually threw him a reverse chin lock at one point. That was weird. He knew a wrestling move. I didn't know that.
Did he hit him with like a nerve hold too or something?
I guess you want to call it that. At one point, Taker is back in control of the match and knocks the big man to his knees. And then this is the best part of the match, actually. Harvey Whippleman throws Gonzalez a rag that's soaked with chloroform, which Gonzalez tries now to knock out on the Taker. The ref disqualifies him for using another fucking disqualification for using a foreign object. Taker wins the match by DQ.
DQs and countouts at this WrestleMania.
This is just a long card of DQs. And countouts and whatnot, or false countouts, I should say.
Bullshit and swerves.
Yeah. But anyway, as you heard me play the RESPECT clip before, we're coming to.
Actually, before we get into the Bret Hart.
Go ahead.
Another match that I saw at that Meadowlands card for the WrestleMania Revenge Tour. My one and only time seeing both of these men wrestle. Giant Gonzalez against Macho Man Randy Savage.
Really?
Yes.
Oh, there's got to be footage of this shit. I want to see this card.
Not a good match at all.
No, of course not.
It was like one of those matches where, you know, as a kid, I was like, how the hell is he going to have this match? How is Macho Man... Can Macho Man slam this guy? Can he really do anything? And I don't really remember, like, the only... I think... I know it ended by DQ. It was either, like, DQ or countout. Some bullshit finish, too. And a lot of, like, choke holds and stuff like that. And I was like, oh, man, like... How is Macho Man gonna, you know, pull his way out of this one? But that was such a random match to see. I wish my memory was, you know, more clear on it.
Listen, your memory is clear enough for this. I'm so happy that you brought this up. I didn't even know you were there at that point. That's cool.
Yeah.
I like that. I like that.
Johnny Gonzalez versus Macho Man. It happened. I saw it.
I believe you. I'm sure it did.
And Macho Man won by either count out or DQ. Most likely DQ. I think it may have been because he was choking him for too long or some shit like that.
Before we get into the main event, Dave, I want to talk about Yokozuna for a second. And we've mentioned before our admiration for the big man, how he was probably the most agile big man in the business ever.
For his size and weight,
600 pounds was amazing. At a time in the country where we're at war, like the Middle East and Iraq and all this other nonsense, and there's so much crap going on in the world, it's nice to see that they still have the old Japanese gimmick to bring it back. And leave it to Fuji for reinventing himself as an older guy at this point, and leave it to them to make a Hawaiian guy a Japanese guy. It just made perfect sense. This is probably
a Samoan. He's part of the family.
Yeah.
The Inoue family.
Samoans. He's the Rock's cousin.
Yeah.
You know? The thing is, here's a guy that, you know, whoever gave him that gimmick, genius. Genius. This was perfect. And he was like Coquinas Maximus or something like that when he was in the minor leagues. He was a menace too in developmental.
He was in UWF, I believe. Right, there was a match between him and Ron Simmons where Simmons slams him.
Coquino, I think it was. I'm trying to do it by memory. I think it's Coquino Maximus was his name. But anyway, he's now in a title match at WrestleMania. This is really cool. Now Bret Hart defies. Can Bret Hart defy the odds? This was hyped really well.
Yeah.
Bret Hart looking for some recognition, looking for obviously respect.
He wanted to respect his world heavyweight champion, the hardest working WWF champion. Yokozuna was destroying everybody in his path, including Hacksaw Jim Duggan. Hacksaw Jim Duggan was his first real opponent, and they had that very almost emotional match on, I think it was Superstars, or it's either Superstars or Challenge. Yokozuna Banzai dropped him like more than once. They had to gurney him out.
I remember that. That was Wrestling Challenge.
Yeah, and I remember that. You know, it's like one of those kind of situations where it's like, oh, if anybody's going to, you know, knock Yokozuna off his block, it's going to be Hacksaw Jim Duggan. But Duggan couldn't do it. They had to gurney his ass out. And that was part of Yokozuna's gimmick, that whoever got hit with the Banzai drop, they were out of commission. They were put on the shelf.
Yeah.
So the same was expected for Bret Hart. And Bret Hart was another dude who was like, how is he going to have this match? How is he going to get a good match out of Yokozuna? And if he even wins, how would he win?
Yeah, again, he was a beast, man. And he was so menacing looking too, like with the flags and the ceremonial salt and everything about him reeked of awesomeness. Like he was honestly one of the best bad guys in that era.
Absolutely.
You know? And at the time when you're younger, you don't really think about it. I realized what was going on, but like I appreciate this more now, you know, as an adult. I actually have the clip. It was actually from Wrestling Superstars. This was from February 6, 1993.
Duggan's not moving at all. Get him out of there. He gave it everything he had, but look what he's going to have to show for it. No, no, no!
Fuji telling him to do it again.
Duggan is not moving. No. No, get him down.
Get him down.
I can't believe what
Fuji's telling him to do it again.
This great victory of Duggan.
There's two refs in the ring now.
Come on. Get this man away. Get him out of
here. Kids in the crowd are frightened.
No.
Yeah. He's terrified. I thought he was going to kill him.
Son of Smith.
There's kids in the. They have. The kids are horrified.
Mr. Fuji now!
Fuji now defacing the American flag. He lays the flag over a half-dead Jim Duggan. That's fucking awesome. Danny Davis, Joey Morella, and some other scrub referee now. Yeah, here comes Bill Alfonso. Oh, Fuji's going to go up again.
And Jerry Lawler blaming Duggan for everything.
Yeah, and Jerry Lawler is just like, Rene Goulet is now in there yelling at him in French.
We witnessed a great triumph for Jim Duggan. And
Duggan's out. Duggan's dead. Jim Duggan's dead, ladies and gentlemen.
We witnessed the desecration of that victory.
Desecration.
Desecration of the red, white, and the blue.
Hey, you got to admit, Vince did a great job on this one.
Awesome. Tony C joining us. Hello, sir.
What's going on, fellas?
What's
you
up?
You know I had to make a run in for this pay-per-view.
Well, we're... Yes.
I was thinking that. I was like, is he going to call in tonight? I think so. I know you're going to be calling in next week, too.
And he calls in right before the main event, too. We'll talk about Yokozuna, Tony C. Tony C from The Rant every Tuesday night on Rant EM Radio. Cheap plug. We'll talk about Yokozuna.
Yes, sir.
And you know our love for the big man. We spoke about this even on your show and a couple of the shows. What did you think of Yokozuna back then? You were a younger kid, too. You were around Dave's age. So how did you feel as a kid watching him?
Well, you got to remember during that period of time, Phil, you know, you had the earthquakes and the typhoons. And then, you know, he came along and he could move better than, you know, he's a lot more agile than those guys.
Yep, I just said that to Dave.
And
he had some quick feet.
You know, and they put him in that spot.
The dude
was 600 pounds and could do a reverse crescent kick, like, better than Shawn Michaels.
Yeah, it was so...
Oh, yeah.
It was just weird, like, seeing him move like that, you know?
To be that agile.
Yeah, dude, 600 pounds, like Dave said.
You know, I know like the term agile is thrown around quite a bit, and you know, there's like, you know, dudes like Vader that can do moonsaults and stuff like that, but Vader wasn't as big as Yokozuna Yokozuna to do stuff like reverse crescent kicks or to run and jump.
Yeah, the biggest Vader was like almost 400.
Yeah.
He was on Coco.
He wasn't 600 pounds.
No, he wasn't 600 pounds at all. So
would you guys agree that Yoko and the Giant were like the two most agile guys to be that size?
Absolutely.
Yeah, because Paul White would do the drop kick off the top rope at one point.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
It takes Lee to talk about that drop kick from the Great American Bash, 96.
Yeah, we're not going to talk about Halloween Havoc, that's all. And shitty monster trucks.
Or that jump that he took off of the roof
Joe Louis Arena, right? Was that Joe Louis Arena?
The real suicide dive.
Joe Louis Arena.
Home of the Chicago.
It was a real suicide dive.
Home of the Red Wings in Motown.
Yes, sir.
Apparently the home of Joe Louis.
Yeah. No, the Pistons played at the Palace. They didn't play at Joe Louis.
Yeah, they played at the Palace.
Okay. All right.
Auburn Hills.
Auburn Hills, right.
The match,
I'm sorry. We're a lot of basketball talk tonight. A lot of basketball talk tonight. We mentioned Giant Gonzalez, the Atlanta Hawks. Dave thought Hakeem Olajuwon was on the Hawks.
Hey, man, it's been a while.
A lot of basketball talk tonight.
I haven't played NBA in a while.
Are you guys amazed how they shrunk Giant Gonzalez's suit to fit El Torito? Like,
oh god!
Listen, if they
mixed it in with the colors and the whites.
Yeah, they didn't go to
with the colors and the whites.
They definitely didn't go to Jefferson Cleaners for that. I can tell you that. Right. All right.
Wrong. Wrong.
Your main event.
Like a George Jefferson Memorial Ladder Match.
Yeah. And put
climbing that ladder.
Yeah.
Moving on up
with Hornswoggle. Another shitty WWF movie. Moving on up with Hornswoggle. All right. In the main event.
Starring the New Day.
New Day. Oh. Your next tag team champions, by the way. Your main event.
I don't think so.
Your main event for the World Wrestling Federation Heavyweight Championship, Bret the Hitman Hart defends against a mighty Yokozuna, which means grand champion if you're not Japanese. Okay. So, the match, considering the size difference, was really, really good, I thought.
I don't know. I did not like this match.
Over.
I thought the match was okay. It wasn't over-the-top amazing. You know,
so, I don't know. I felt with Bret Hart's background, you know, he couldn't hit him with the suplex. He couldn't really.
He tried a clothesline. You know, Yokozuna did a nice clothesline, a leg drop, the nerve hold. He did the nerve hold.
Yeah.
You mentioned the nerve hold before. He did the nerve hold, I think. And then, you know, Hart makes his big.
Crush's finisher?
What?
You talking about Crush's finisher?
No, Crush was the cranium.
The cranium.
Right,
oh,
but okay. No, his was like the nerve, like the Vulcan death grip almost, you know? Like, you know, Baron Von Raschke used to use that nerve hold before he hit you with the claw, you know?
That's true.
Yeah, so he turns around, like, now of course, the face champion regains the advantage when Yoko misses the splash, applies another hold, another nerve hold. But misses the splash again. He recovers, carries him bodily, Bret Hart, I'm talking about, to the middle of the ring. Hart removes the padding on the turnbuckle, which he was fucking famous for, which pissed me off all the time. He did it in almost.
I thought famous for taking the chest into the turnbuckle.
Yeah, but he would always take the belt buckle. I mean, no, the belt buckle tells won't be.
I thought Shawn Michaels was famous for that.
Yeah, they both did it. And when he was in the Hart Foundation, he constantly did it, taking – and, of course, yeah, Bret taking a chest shot too, like Dave mentioned.
Yeah.
He removes the padding, threw Yoko's head into the turnbuckle, applies the sharpshooter, which I couldn't believe he got it on him.
Yeah, that was amazing to see.
Right, so now Master Fuji comes in all his glory, throws the salt in the eyes. Yoko gets the pin, right? So now – Shock. It was the shot heard around the world almost. It was Bobby Thompson-ish. Yokozuna.
Yeah, this was a pretty big deal. That
big deal. Because the monster heel, a real monster bad guy, not fucking Giant Gonzalez monster, a real monster bad guy. A believable heel wins the title and it was convincing, okay?
Yeah.
He pins Bret Hart convincingly, right? But the celebration goes on, and then
originator of the Money in the Bank contract.
Right now, this is I can remember
this opportunity.
I can remember sitting in my friend's couch, just like stunned. I did not think Yokozuna was winning the title. I thought it was a typical like Andre Hogan, like that kind of match where Bret would get the upper hand and win the match. You know what I'm saying? Like, I thought Bret Hart was going to walk away with the title. No one thought Yokozuna was going to win. No one.
WWF has relied on faces to, you know, spearhead their company since the beginning. And, you know, whenever a heel would win a title, it wouldn't be on a major card like WrestleMania.
Right.
So it was kind of like almost unbelievable that if it was going to happen, you wouldn't expect it to happen at WrestleMania.
Speaking of not expecting stuff to happen, after the match, celebration still going on in the ring. Here comes the immortal one. Here comes Hulk Hogan. Hulkamania comes to the ring to check on his buddy Bret Hart.
That's right.
Yeah, Hogan had stated
minding his own business.
Well, Hogan cut a promo before that early in the night saying that he wanted to face the winner of the match, right? He said, you know, he mentioned that to somebody. He mentioned it to Gene Oakland, right?
Genus Maximus or whatever he was called.
Genus Maximus.
After the tag team match, right?
Exactly, after the tag team match. And
no, actually, it was before this match.
No. It was earlier.
No.
After his match, though. I was saying after it.
Yeah, after the tag team match.
Yeah,
right.
After their match.
Yeah, yeah.
After his match.
No, no, he does it before the match starts.
Are you sure?
Yeah.
I got double
before
check.
His match?
Oh, before, no, before Bret Hart's match. Okay.
Yeah, that's what I was saying, but but it was after his after initial the match.
Okay.
Yeah.
So
he was already geared up in his tights and weight belt.
So Hogan runs in.
He had on his no holds barred outfit.
Yeah, his rip special.
His rip special.
Okay, so now Hogan comes in the ring to check on his boy. Fuji is irate. Even though
he's
living. He was like, Fuji's celebrating, and now 30 seconds later, he's fit to be tied because Hulk Hogan's in the ring. So Fuji does the dumb thing, challenges Hogan to face Yokozuna in an impromptu bout, right? Hogan, of course, the crowd goes berserk. Agrees to the match, comes back in the ring.
Bell didn't ring.
No, Bell did not ring. Fuji tried to throw salt in Hogan's eyes, but he missed and hits the big man instead. Hogan does now perform his patented leg drop and pins Yokozuna to win the World Wrestling Federation title in 22 seconds.
The original Money in the Bank contract winner.
Yeah. So
there was no contract signed. There was no match won to earn this.
My only beef with this, and this is not a Hogan knock on Hogan, because you know I don't like him that much, but my only beef with this is the epic match that Yokozuna just had with Bret Hart, right? They
meant nothing.
Right, because they went and the match was almost 9 minutes long, right? But it was a solid 9 minutes for the fact that, you know, Yokozuna outweighed him by over 300 pounds, right?
Not just outweighed him, but the dude
out-wrestled him.
One thing that we didn't, you know, talk about with Yokozuna, you know, we mentioned him being agile and stuff, but the dude bumped.
Of course. No, that was the whole part of the mystique. Yeah, we should have mentioned that. That's a good point, dude. But, like, what bothered me was they fight this really solid 10-minute match, and 22 seconds, he loses.
That's all it takes for an immortal one, man.
Yeah. That was the power of Hulkamania. So once
with cowboy boots, not even wrestling boots.
Yeah.
He's the only person to win the title with cowboy boots.
He actually wore those on the jet ski when he busted his face.
Hey, I want to quote Hulk Hogan after the match to explain everything. And he laid it out for Yokozuna and he said, "I told you not to mess with Mother Nature."
Yep.
Plain and simple. That's why Hulkamania will rule forever and a day.
So there's wrestling.
Until
Hollywood takes over 2-3 years later.
Until King of the Ring 93.
To King of the Ring, yeah.
That damn fireball.
Let's talk
about. You know, you would think that those Japanese cameras would be tough enough.
Fucking Nikons are. they're terrible.
Cannons.
It did. It was Nikons. The Nikons. You put that the casing in wrong and forget it. You could spark up the whole place.
Yeah, that's pretty much what happened.
You know, I actually have a interview on Monday with a Japanese advertising company that one of their big clients is Canon. So I'll make sure not to mention WrestleMania. I mean, King of the Ring 93 during the interview.
They're probably still paying out that lawsuit to whoever they burned, to a bunch of people that they burned.
You know what? We talk about, you know, tacky things, but King of the Ring 93, that camera guy stood out. He was worse than that Russian impersonator on Monday night. I'm sorry.
That's a good point.
That guy stood out like a sore thumb.
We got to do King of the Ring 93. Maybe we'll do King of the Ring 93 this summer. Maybe we'll do it in June around King of the Ring time when it used to be King of the Ring.
Maybe we'll do King of the Ring month.
Yeah, maybe we'll do that.
Because we haven't touched on any of those. That sounds fun.
King Booker. Anyway.
Make sure we do King of the Ring 2002.
2002?
Okay. Is that Hogan versus Angle?
No. Who won 2002?
Brock.
Oh, that's right.
Yeah, but wasn't that when
that set up Brock? Didn't that set up Brock versus Rock? No, right?
Yep,
that did. Okay.
Yeah, all but right. Wait, didn't it have Hogan versus Angle on there?
Did it?
That might have happened at King. Yeah, you're right. That did happen at King of the Ring 2002. Ah, you're right, Dave.
It was I know Brock
and lost the title a month before.
Yeah.
At Judgment Day.
Yeah.
There was a really good Jericho versus RVD match on that as well.
Are we doing a 2000? Yeah, we doing a throwback from the 2000s? Is that what we're going to be doing? I don't know. Maybe we might. We could do it. So it's over 10 years old, right?
Yeah, yeah.
That was the whole rule. It had to be over 10 years old.
10 years.
All right. Yeah, maybe
King of the Ring 02. Yeah.
Maybe we'll do that one. All right. All right.
And before you sign off, Phil, I just want to say you were, you said Hogan sullying. He sullied that match.
Yeah.
Well, we could have the same thing happen at this WrestleMania if Seth Rollins does the same thing.
Seth Rollins could possibly do the...
Can finally cash in that money.
In the bank. My kid just asked me today, he goes, when's he cashing that thing in? How long does he have? That's exactly what my son said to me tonight at dinner.
So when is the next Money in the Bank? Because he's got a year, right?
July.
All right, so he's got...
Yeah. So the aftermath of WrestleMania had some low points. Shawn Michaels, as Dave mentioned, Shawn Michaels and Mr. Perfect did have a feud.
It was less than perfect.
At SummerSlam. Michaels won by count out with his new bodyguard, Diesel, who attacked Perfect. They feuded until leaving the company. Money Inc. finally lost the tag belts to the Steiners. Won them back on a rematch like 2 days later.
That was a great feud.
Yep, Steiners won them again 3 days later. And then Money Inc. got a bunch of matches, but they couldn't do it. Unfortunately, Undertaker did continue to feud with Harvey Whippleman, who had a new acquisition, the Roughneck Mr. Hughes, and his manager.
His name is not the Roughneck; it's the Uncle Tom.
Uncle Tom, you're right, Curtis.
Yeah, the Uncle Tom Pookie Award winner, Mr. Hughes.
Exactly.
Pookie, that's Mr. right.
Curtis Hughes.
That set up the SummerSlam Rest in Peace match. Was that the WrestleMania? Was that the SummerSlam with Lindsay with the dude from Naked Gun?
No, I think that is 94.
I think that's
next
94.
Year.
Okay. Leslie Nielsen. Okay.
That's Taker.
That was Taker versus Taker, Bret and Owen in the cage, and Sweetness Walter Payton in the corner of Razor Ramon against Diesel and Shawn Michaels for the IC belt.
Here's something I didn't know. Bret Hart apparently claimed that during a conversation with Vince, he was told that Hulk Hogan refused to drop the belt to him to have like a face.
You never hear about that?
I didn't know that it wound up where Hogan, there was a separate conversation. Hogan was leaving the company. A deal was made to drop the belt to Yokozuna following that King of the Ring. With McMahon telling Bret one thing, yet telling Hulk Hogan another. The three men would eventually obviously wind up in a meeting where McMahon denies everything. Bret said that Hogan refused, blah, blah, blah. Yokozuna regained the title. And this was when I was at the Intrepid. He challenged any American athlete to body slam on the USS Intrepid. It was 100...
You didn't get up there, Phil, to slam
Yokozuna? No, it was 107 degrees that day, okay? It was fucking hot. And Fat Phil was there sweating his balls off.
Helicopter down didn't give you some nice breeze.
Some breeze.
No, but I did crack a 40 at Grand Central that day. Nice. Yeah, I did got some old English. Never forget that.
You said it was 106, and Lex gets off the
helicopter.
The freaking helicopter with the red, white, and blue shirt.
Right.
Skinny jeans and snakeskin boots.
Which he takes off the shirt.
Right. I mentioned this was the first WrestleMania outdoors. They didn't go outdoors again until 2008, just an FYI. And that was pretty much... What's that, Tony?
I was going to say, you should name this episode Las Vegas Tram.
We already have it. I don't know if you were listening, but...
Oh, you already got a title.
Yeah, because we played... Dave mentioned, you remember back in 2000, I think in 2004, where they did that WWE Originals album?
Yeah.
Rikishi had a song called "Put a Little Ass on It."
Yeah,
yeah, that's gonna be
Oh, that's the name of the episode.
Put a little ass on it. Yeah. So that's pretty much where we stand right now.
I wanted to add a few more things about WrestleMania 9.
Go ahead, man.
That we didn't talk about. One thing was, I don't know if it was true or not. There was a poster going around. I think over the past year or so. Don't know if it was real or if it was somebody's Photoshop, but, you know, supposedly the...
It wasn't you bootlegging your fucking posters on eBay again, right?
No, no. But,
fucking Dave.
There was a poster going around of a potential main event for WrestleMania 9, and it was going to be Flair defending the World Heavyweight title against Bret Hart. How do you think that would pan out as opposed to Yokozuna versus Bret Hart?
Him and Flair were great together, but Flair went back home and did his thing with Vader.
So yeah,
that was
which
was Slamboree, right, Tony? When he beat
Starrcade,
the Starrcade,
Starrcade 94 was it or 93? No, it had to be 93 because Hogan was the main event against the Butcher for Starrcade 94.
No, it's just 93 I'm talking about.
Yeah,
93. The other thing was we actually spoke with Tom Buchanan, the former WWF photographer, about the whole Bret Hart, Hulk Hogan thing. What's that?
I said falling out.
Just the falling out, but I remember Bret Hart saying that there was a photo shoot with him and Hogan, and like they're both like holding the World Heavyweight title.
Wait, so the photo shoot he mentioned was about the same conversation they had about him not dropping the title?
Yeah, and that's part of our interview that we had with him.
I totally forgot about that. Yeah.
So I don't remember what episode number or what the name of the show was, but
look at it on TurboGlothrowbacks.com, goddammit.
Yeah. And, you know, check out the archives, you know, listen to a throwback of our throwback.
Fucking right. Come on, man. Do the right
Bret thing. Bret and Hogan fought one time, and it was in WCW. Okay. And Bret hurt his leg, and he ended up joining NWO as an associate.
For life.
Didn't it have like a DQ finish or count out or some bullshit?
Well, what happened was Bret fakes hurt. He gets on the gurney. They pull him. They take him to the back. They put him on the ambulance. That's when Steiner and I think Steiner and somebody else are back there beating the hell out of the Wolfpack. Two Wolfpack guys. So it was a setup to jump the Wolfpack.
Mm.
And it led into the whole Macho Man getting ran over with the car and Hogan getting the title back. You remember that, don't you?
Yeah.
Viper speeding off.
It's all coming back to me now. I remember that.
I don't remember any of that because there was so much shit happening at that time. Like, it was so hard to keep up with it.
Yeah, WCW.
Well, like, those good times, man.
Hogan faced Sting twice before their big Starrcade match.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
They got that on his archive DVD when he came out in the Phantom of the Opera mask.
Yes, with the sword.
From the crowd.
From the crypt.
Yeah. They had ticked him off. They started turning on him, so he put on the Phantom of the Opera mask.
Yeah, man.
That's pretty much it.
Precursor to Hollywood. And they shaved off his mustache, too.
Yeah.
That dastardly Dungeon of Doom.
Anything else on WrestleMania 9?
It was good.
Man, I loved the ending.
Good card.
I wanna
even though it had all these shitty count outs and disqualifications, you know.
I gotta ask you guys. I think Phil already answered this, so this goes out to Tony C. Because we're similar age. We were losing our minds, you know, when all this stuff was happening. Because since I didn't have cable, I didn't watch it. I didn't have pay per view. I found out the next day, and you know, I immediately asked my friends who won. And they're like, Hulk Hogan's the new champion. I'm like, how is that possible? He wasn't even in the main events. And then they explained everything, and I'm like, oh my god, how could I miss that? Like, I wanted to hang myself. How did you feel, Tony, when you heard that news? Whether you saw the preview or the next day?
you know, as a young Hulkamaniac, all of about 10 years old, you know, I was ecstatic. And, you know, once that happened, when I heard about it, then, you know, you said you didn't have the luxury or you weren't watching pay-per-view or cable. You know, when Raw came on, it was like must-see now. Because Hogan had the title. Yeah, and all things were good with wrestling, you know. A lot of people give my man flack, but hey.
No. I really didn't give him flack. I just felt like it was, after the match Yokozuna had with Bret Hart, it was almost like that kid, you know, like the middle sibling when the young sibling comes in and gets all the attention, and the older one does something like to try to get the attention back. That's how I felt Hogan was.
Yeah.
Or the storyline, not Hulk Hogan himself, but I'm talking about, you know.
Go ahead. I'm sorry, Dave. I was just gonna say my thing about a lot of those guys, man, in the industry, you gotta have a big ego.
They huge egos, and you know that, and you know some of those guys had creative control of their character,
could go to Vince at least and say, "Hey, how about this?
Yeah, exactly.
I'm not doing this.
Yeah, exactly, exactly.
They would talk about it. It wouldn't be like, oh no, yeah, we have to do this,
right? So, I mean, it is what it is. Even though he won the title, it was still a good finish, I thought. And I thought the commentating was great. I thought the ambiance was great. I loved the whole Caesar's Palace thing. It was awesome.
Fans were great.
Yeah, no celebrities really, so that was weird too.
No, there was Natalie Cole.
That doesn't count. Yeah. Natalie was on the crack rock at that point.
Oh, come on.
She was. Tony, am I lying? She was stuck in that glass dick, right?
Yes, she was on it, man.
On the pookie. That's right. She's on the poop.
Unforgettable. That's how she'll stay.
Right. So, but Natalie Cole, Natalie Cole got money from Hogan and Beefcake with the briefcase.
Yeah. Like, no. She said that she didn't get any money.
She didn't get money. That's right.
They stiffed her.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yes.
Because you know what? She's trying to score that rock. You know.
Man. So when you
can't come to a sports entertainment venue and try to score a crack.
Wait a second. What was the big thing? Like, she re-released her dad's, you know, single, you know, Unforgettable, with her singing over it with him.
Yeah.
So that was good enough for some good crack, right? I guess
she could sing, man. She comes from a lineage.
She should call Tony Montana. He can get her a deal.
That's right.
Hey, she could probably party with Tommy Lee and Pam Anderson with that 20-30 grand that they spent on his on drugs for his birthday party.
Man, Tommy Lee's Thor.
Now if she wants the cocaina, she just hang with Tony and Ike.
That's right. She wants that booger sugar. That's right. That's right.
That was a hell of a weekend.
All right. Tony C, I appreciate you doing a run-in.
With Brutus Beefcake, too.
I appreciate you coming. I appreciate
with,
you doing
with the Anthrax.
Yeah, right? I appreciate you doing the run-in, brother. Thank you.
Riding the rails.
Yeah, man. Thanks for hanging out with us for a few minutes. I appreciate it.
I appreciate you guys allowing me on. And next week,
it's going to be on your birthday next week. The birthday boy.
Next Thursday is the birthday, but you guys are the day before the pre-birthday.
So we're going to celebrate it. It's Tony C's birthday, so you're welcome
with the original screw job.
Yeah, that's right. So you want?
Thank you, Dave. I was going to say
You want to call in for your birthday? We'll do some WrestleMania 10 with us. So we appreciate it.
Oh yes, sir. Yes, sir.
I'm sure you're opinionated about one of the main events there.
Yeah,
you know I am sponsored by ICO Pro.
You gotta want it.
Zumba pants.
Zumba. I'm gonna wear my Zubaz. I just got them. Shout out to Eric from Minnesota. Our fan Eric Martin from the Facebook page. He sent me a pair of Zubaz from the Minnesota Twins.
Went to the factory and got it for you.
He went to a Twins game and got. They were giving them away.
Oh my God.
Yeah.
Kirby Puckett was wearing them.
I'm going to wear my Kirby Puckett pants next week just for you now.
All right, there you go.
All right, so.
But I appreciate you guys having me on, and I'll definitely be calling in next week, pre-birthday party celebration, pre-WrestleMania.
This is going to be fresh to death.
Yes, sir, fresh to death.
See you next week, Tony.
All right, fellas, much love.
Take
care, Tony C.
All right, Black Hammer on the rant every Tuesday night. You ready to get out of here? I am exhausted, brother.
Yeah, we went longer than I expected, but this was a much talked about WrestleMania.
All right. Ladies and gentlemen, thank you so much for hanging out with us in the chat room. Thank you in advance for downloading it. Go to turnbuckle-throwbacks.com. It'll be up in a little while. RantEMRadio.com. It'll be there. It'll be on ShiningWizardsNetwork.com. All new shows on these networks this week. Go get them. Really good stuff. TurnbuckleThrowbacks.com, like I mentioned. ProWrestlingTees.com/TurnbuckleThrowbacks. We're not hard to find, kids. WrestleMania season's in effect. Dave, any closing words?
Sayonara.
All right, kids. Till next week. Take care of yourselves, each other. Avoid the clap. Don't get arrested. Hug your mom.
ThumbstickNinjas.com.
ThumbstickNinjas.com. And happy birthday, Mom.